Welcome back to the Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media. I'm Dean.
I'm Matthew.
On this week's episode, we bring you Season 8, Episode 5, The Big Scary You.
Matt, we're back.
We're
here, and we're talking the big scary you. We're in person looking at each other.
Yeah, that's a first.
You're getting to use the Shure SM7B.
Oh, it's so good.
It's nice, right?
It's so good.
It's going to make my life way easier. Super easy to edit this.
True. You don't hear my crinkling shit and fan and all sorts of other stuff.
Because it's apparently still 900 degrees in Portland.
I'm just lazy, actually. This is what it is. So anyway,
definitely the best episode of the season.
Dude,
close.
The previous episode and this one are by far the strongest episodes this season so far. I mean, they're pretty shoulder to shoulder for me. I watched this episode 3 fucking times, by the way. We just watched it, me, you, and Jess.
Right.
And that's the third time I've seen this episode. And I liked it even more then. Like, this was a good fucking episode, man.
I've seen it over once.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Over one time.
Over once?
Over, what is that? Over once.
One and a half? Like, what does that mean?
I don't know.
One and a smattering of other
scenes? I've seen it more than once, less than twice. Because there's a couple, you know, I didn't see. I watched it.
You leaned on the toilet out, looking out the door to catch the side of the TV on this?
Yeah. And I had to keep the fan off so I could hear the dialogue. You know, that move. You're like, fuck it. Nobody's home. Trying to listen to the game.
What? Is Simon said something about trade routes, I think. Turn off the fan.
Anyway, so yeah, scary you, big scary you, that is
big scary you,
unknown, that's supposed to be,
that's not I think it's the Monsters Inc. University.
I was just gonna say it, the big scary you, it's like some fucking fictional kid's place out of an adolescent Goosebumps book, right? Like the big scary university.
Big scary you.
Yeah. Where our booger monsters learn how to be scary. It's like one of those Goosebumps books.
I'm a teen mummy, but I still have acne and those kind of problems too.
Yeah.
Kids can relate.
What's happening? What's happening to my body book for goblin boys?
Mommy, I've got a weird boner.
Warts and 3 dicks. It's all normal for goblin boys.
But the mummy boy doesn't have 3 dicks.
He has a different book, sweetie.
That'll be the next series of Goosebumps.
All right. So we are on target so far. We are locked in.
Stay on target.
We are drinking rum and beer. By the way, we're in person, just getting lit.
Yeah,
talking about The Walking Dead. Boy, howdy.
Pouring out for them towel boys in the 224.
But yeah, man. No, I really enjoyed this. I was worried a little bit about what they were going to do with Negan this season. It's been a while since we'd seen him. And I was wondering how they're going to bring him back. You know, I'll admit I had a fear of coming back to you know, Father G and him inside of the little, like, you know, box that they're in, basically. And I'm like, that could be compelling, cool, like, bottle episode, or it could be boring and terrible and, like, overused Negan leaning back. Like, kind of like, I was like, it really was like on a knife's edge of it. Ooh, just the idea alone could be real shitty or pretty good. Damn, dude, I think they pulled it off. I really, really like this. And also, this is an episode where I actually think the directing itself was really solid. Like, I should have already looked this up, but I want to look up who directed this episode because I thought it was just really well done.
It flowed. Yeah, it didn't, you know, they didn't try to do too many things. They did what they set out to do, they executed well, right? And of course, as much fun as it is for me to talk about things like weapons play and sound effects and ejection of brass and all the shit that kind of bothers me, they didn't have any of that this episode to contest with.
No. Right?
They stayed pretty consistent to everything they did, and that they didn't have to, there was nothing there needed to execute that was beyond being technically competent at doing, right?
Yeah. There was no distracting technical failures.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, nothing for you to gripe about, too bad.
That's right. That's right. I kept my gripey pants in the drawer tonight. I don't have much to gripe about at all. That's going to really shock people.
Wow, right?
This is pretty interesting in good Walking Dead, I think. Right?
This harkens back to The Walking Dead's greater strengths, for sure.
It does. Character stuff. And
yeah. And I mean, and we've talked about this a lot, you know, of how far Father G has come as a character of being like interesting. And I give a shit about it. I went from hating this guy to like, when, like, I'm like checking my watch of like, when's this fucker going to die? Like,
sure.
Why are we pretending he's going to be a main character? Fuck this guy. To like, I love Father G. And I'm like concerned with what's going to happen to him. I don't want him to be in, you know, peril. I'm like, no, fuck.
And being genuinely mad that they were going to mismanage a guy like Seth Gilliam.
That's a good, yeah.
We talked
about
that
more than me because you've watched The Wire. I haven't.
Right.
But he is like, he has a lot of, this is a great episode for highlighting his, you know, skill. He's good in this. He's a really, you know, effective actor. But they a lot of times didn't give him much to do.
For sure.
And yeah, if they had wasted the, you know, potential, it would be pretty shitty.
Right. That would have been the real fuck of it all, is if they just blew him away and just wasted him.
No.
They secure this guy, they get him on the show, and then nothing.
We got a Robert De Niro guest appearance, and he's going to be the guy who slips and falls on a banana in the background.
maybe I should stick to fucking old man comedy.
Oh, I shit myself. It's Mr. Fokker, falls down and dies.
Oh, no. Goodfellas is so many years ago.
this
look
cameo.
At me. Insulted him a little bit. A little out of order yourself.
A little bit.
A little bit.
This cameo. Ain't his cameo.
Drinks. Around the house.
This cameo, still $1.2 million.
And he breathes. He's always breathing like that, like a weirdo. Anyway. You saw Cape Fear with him, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Side tangent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Counselor man. So good.
So,
yeah, man. What are some standout moments this week for you?
Ooh, man. The confrontation, you know, it's kind of a drawn out dialogue confrontation between Father G and Negan, but the scene where Father G kind of starts like running down, you know, the list of the things that Negan's done. And Negan's like unrepentant for all of it. Like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, I've never killed anybody that need to be killed. Oh, it's, yeah, they're not slaves. It's a, you know, it's an economy. People, you know, some people win, some people lose, whatever. And when he gets to the point where he starts talking about his wives, and when you can tell that's the knife turn for mm-hmm. him, that's the thing he actually does feel some guilt and some shame for, that was super interesting. And that was also one of the best character moments for Negan. Like, you know, they have finally given him something more than, I'm the guy with a bat in my lean back.
Imagine if we did podcasts like that. Whoa.
Just way off, back here. I'm off the mind. Just
like
fucking.
So fucking hard. There you go.
But yeah, that was a standout scene for me. Trying to think what else. I mean, one of the most cohesive. That's what I guess I mean by directing too. It was like one of the most cohesive episodes, even though they're doing, I had a thought more so, it's funny because since I've watched this three times now, on my second viewing, I kind of had the thought of, is this becoming a Walking Dead cliche to do the back and forth in time thing? Because there are times where I'm like, this is fine. You're doing it to, you know, well, and I understand the story, but I'm like, do we need it? Like, can't we just do a full forward momentum, start here and here episode every now and then? And it seems like they haven't done that much. But this episode was still so good that I didn't even care that this is like the ninth time in a row we've had that kind of back and forth timeline episode. I think it worked, man. It was, like I said, cohesive is the word that comes to mind. Like, it all worked together really well. I loved also just the whole, we talked about this so much more last season, wanting to see what the upper brass of the Saviors looks like. Like, what is
sure.
that?
What is that? How does that operate?
Yeah, because so often we are in the position, you know, we as the audience are in the same position as like an outsider or one of the lowly pieces of dog shit that just lives at Sanctuary. We just see Negan up on his, you know, catwalk like, I'm the fucking guy. And that's
Whoa.
It. I'm gonna burn this dude's face. And like, that's...
I love talking about dicks and balls.
Ooh, I'm gonna swing my balls around. Like, that's it. Like, that's our... We didn't get to see anymore. Like, this sounds boring. I want the C-SPAN of the Sanctuary. I'm like, where did they get policy done? How do they make decisions? What do they do? And I liked seeing this, like
old British Parliament. Like, they just argue all day on access television.
Finally,
that's a Travisher mockery.
An old Japanese senator hits somebody with a cane because they still fucking do that.
Yes.
But yeah, like, I loved the glimpses of the Saviors without Negan and them as a, you know, as a board, like a, you know, 12 Angry Men boardroom. Like, what do we do now? How do we handle this? And the tension at the end with all of the vacuum of leadership leading to the beginnings of chaos, seeing that. Oh, that was good shit, man. I really like that.
Me too. I think Negan's definitely the standout in this along with Father Gabriel for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I think that scene is really standout in it, and it makes it, it's, There's a lot of interesting things to talk about as far as that's concerned.
Yeah. I don't think we should skip by, you know, Daryl's hair and how greasy and long it was and in his eyes. I think that was a standout too.
It was a standout, you know. I will say this, Daryl, I was on Daryl's side. I don't usually say that.
It's funny. It's funny that you say that because I went back and forth over a couple of viewings, and I still, at the end of the day, I think I land more on Rick's side. That'll be interesting to talk about.
We'll talk about it. But Michael Satrazemus, or Satrazemus, don't know how to say it. Yeah, this guy is...
Oh, that sounds familiar.
He was a camera, an electrical guy for fucking ever. He's making his bones as a director in this show. And guess what film he was a second assistant camera in?
Oh, shit.
The Crow.
Ooh.
Crazy, huh?
That might be where I remember his name from.
Just seeing the name before, just right?
Seeing the name. Like, I was like, oh, I know that.
Well, he did direct Monsters, The Damned, Not Tomorrow Yet, JSS, First Time Again. I mean, cinematography. Uh-huh. He's directed The Big Scary You, The Other Side, Heart Still Beating.
Heart Still Beating.
I'm going to beat that Russian. Swear, Easts, and he's directed 10 episodes. Knots Untie, Start to Finish, Dry, Slab Down, The Grove. You probably saw his name there.
Oh, yeah. That is probably it.
And then he directed a show called Lore.
Wow, no,
Lore. That's the podcast that became a show.
Oh, yeah. That's right. It's an Amazon TV show now.
Well, we could all aspire to be.
Of course we'll be an LSG TV show, right?
They could do an animated one.
That's true.
Like us animated and then the dumb things we say animated. Are conjured and animated into life. It'd have to be really X-rated at times.
It'd have to be HBO, but as NC-17 as it could possibly be.
It'd have to be on the dark web. It'd be that right next to Strangulation fuck films. What the fuck? I don't know.
Like, I'm uncomfortable pulling this up on my browser history.
What are you doing? I'm creating a cryptocurrency, watching a snuff film. Oh, and snuff film. And oh, checking out this LSG animated show. Pretty cool. That's how it would go down, I think.
All right, man.
So, yeah, that's what he did. He was a second cameraman on The Crow, you know, as well as some other shit. But let's dive in, baby.
Let's do it.
All right, let's talk about Father G.
Ooh, this is old school Father G here. This is him.
The old sweaty Father G?
This is old Father Sweaty. Father McSweaty.
Father McSweats.
Oh, yeah. This is back before he was found by Rick. We get this little flashback of him sitting there basically praying to God for, you know, I'm not afraid of death anymore. I know I'm going to die. What I'm afraid of is a fruitless death. And he's like, I want to live for a purpose.
So he wants off the show.
Go ahead and rhyme. I've got better things to do.
He's like, I'm getting a lot of offers. The scheduling is really weird for this show. And I need you guys to write me out. But can we at least make it worthy?
Make it a cool thing? Yeah, come on.
What's happening on a
Come
medicine?
On, dear Lord Gimple.
Oh, Lordy Lord Scott Gimple. Oh, dear Lord. I swear I'll let you put one finger in me in confession if you allow me to. No, but yeah, I think you're onto something here. I like this whole thing with him. I think they're definitely setting him up.
Yeah. I love this setup. Yeah. Of, you know, this is him all the way back then, even at that point, you know, because that's before we even met him for the first time in the show. And so I like that we get that glimpse of even then he was remorseful and not just remorseful and like guilty and ashamed and just a trembly little sweats boy, but like already at least knowing that he wanted to do better. Even though he was not capable of it.
Sure.
But yeah.
I like it. And we scoot right over into some more back in time action with Simon and...
we already forgot his name.
Jesus Christ.
Gregory.
Oh, Father Gregory.
Father Gregory.
No. here's what I want you to know about Gregory. Ooh. If I'm not mistaken, his name is Gregory. What's his last name? I don't remember. But...
Ooh. Yeah, I can't remember
either. If you guys want to laugh your balls off or go, oh my God, what is happening right now? So this guy that plays him, we've mentioned his name before, Xander Berkeley. I'm sure that was his born name. I'm sure that's his Christian white
Hello,
name.
I'm Xander Berkeley, and me and Rip Torn are making a new movie.
With Powers Booth. It'll be in theaters for 3 weeks. Jesus.
It'll come straight to video with my brother, Electricity Box.
Yeah, I guess. But this guy was a big deal back in the day. Do you know that?
No. What did he
really
do?
He really was, man. He was in a ton of movies. A ton. He is fucking Todd in Terminator 2, remember?
Oh, I do remember that. The guy who gets the fucking spike through the mouth and the milk.
Through the fucking mouth, yeah. Ooh, he was in Candyman, A Few Good Men.
Wow.
Yeah, man. He was in X-Files and Ice. I'm sure, of course, you probably remember that. But I'm trying to remember, what was the thing he was in that I remember the most?
He's in Jericho?
Because I think I probably pulled to it a couple times when I was really young. Poison Ivy 2.
Poison Ivy 2.
He gets fucking, he's fucking around with Alyssa Milano, taking her clothes off. Of all people, this
Never
guy.
Never seen that.
Yes.
Of all, yeah, this guy?
This fucking guy? Alyssa Milano.
Isn't he in Heat? Isn't he the shitty guy she's cheating, Al Pacino's wife is cheating on with?
Hey, you can't watch my motherfucking TV. No, that's not him, I don't think.
Is it not?
It might be.
I feel like I,
What year was Heat? 95? It is him. He's Ralph.
You can't watch my TV, Ralph.
That's him. You can fuck my wife. That's
you
him.
You can't watch my TV.
Yeah, he's in Apollo 13. Poison Ivy 2. If you guys want to crack up, just Google a scene with Xander Berkeley and Alyssa Milano on YouTube, and you're going to be like, oh my God, what is happening? He was supposed to be kind of like, kind of sexy back in the day.
He's really carved out his niche, though, of being like, douchebag slime scumball.
Sure.
That's Al colorful. Pacino's wife.
Yeah.
I fondle Melissa Milano's tits when I'm way too old to be doing it.
Yeah, it's weird. Here's an Amistad.
Oh, wow. Shit.
Gattaca, Dr. Lamar. One Night Stand. Like, why are you in these movies that should be only William Hurt? Only William Hurt gets to fuck Kathleen Turner. I mean, you know. The one Kathleen, there's two different very distinct Kathleen Turners. There's that one, and then there's the now. I'm talking about that one.
The old one.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah.
Anyway, back to the show. So, old Gwegwe is hanging out with this guy who I love, Stephen Ogg.
Simon Ogg.
Love him.
Fantastic. And I love how, you know, this show, this episode doesn't say it explicitly, but they imply that this, because this is all right before this season's premiere, when Rick rolled up to, you know, the sanctuary and confronted Negan and all of them, shot out their windows and all that silly shit. This is right before that, when I guess Gregory had just gotten there and he was drunk. Like, I love in this scene when Simon's like, you know, he's like, oh, you know, I went and met you at the satellite facility, which was totally impressive and an amazing facility. He's like, yeah, you told me that like three times. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, like, stop saying it. Like, you fucking drunk wandering in here begging for help, you piece of shit.
Right.
It's so good.
What a weird role, like, thinking about this guy that he played, like, this sniveling, like, the sniveling agency, right?
Yeah.
They're top clients at the sniveling agency.
Oh, yeah. He brought on, if anything, our boy, what's his name? Daniel, what the fuck is his name?
This is,
shit.
He brought on.
Eli. That's not his real name.
Trainage Eli. That guy? What the fuck
Daniel
is his name?
Fucking,
Yes, he brought on the sniveling agency. Xander Berkeley was the first like client of the sniveling agency sniveling actors. And then it kind of evolved into Eli from There Will Be Blood. He's the ultimate.
Paul Dano. There we go.
Paul Dano.
The greatest sniveler of our generation.
He took over Xander.
Oh, yeah.
Big time.
Xander was his mentor. I mean, he was the apprentice to Xander, and then he became the master.
You know what it's like? It's like in the NFL when they have, like, you know, some white guy quarterback who weighed like 130 pounds who threw like 27 touchdowns against, like, you know, malnourished depression era guys, and they try to say he's as good as guys like Tom Brady and those guys. I'm like, dude, no, he's not. He never would, never. It's no contest. That's what this is. He's like the leather helmet sniveling agency guy.
I've built this.
And
I worked
Paul
on
Dano
it.
Is like the super
steroids.
Offense.
He's on. Yeah. He's on like sniveling steroids.
He's the guy. That's the fucking guy, Paul Dano. Oh, that's
shit.
So good. He's such a sniveler.
Such a sniveler.
Yes. There's a lot of snivelers. We should probably fill out the roster. For sure.
But no, Simon is great in the scene. And honestly, that's the thing, you know, Xander Berkeley, the guy who plays Gregory, is fucking great as this sniveling piece of shit. He's an awful character. He's the worst person. I want him to die so bad. But he's great in being this piece of dog shit. But one thing I like is that you can tell that Simon, I would not say likes Gregory at all. But I think Simon knows that he's invested so much in Gregory that it would look bad on him if Gregory goes, you know, if Gregory falls through and reflects, you know, fucks up something for the Saviors, it makes Simon look real bad.
I think you're right.
He's sunk a, it's like the, what is that, the sunk cost fallacy, where he's like, I've put so much into you and told Negan that this is going to pay off, I'm going to make sure this pays off. I don't fucking like you. You're a sniveling piece of shit, but you need to put on your big boy pants and go in there and tell Negan that you can handle it because I need you to be able to do that.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, he, I don't know. It's interesting that he does, it is his special project. It's almost like his version of the special project.
Right, right. It's like he was, you know, this is his assignment. This guy is, you know, the hilltop.
Yeah, I like it. Well.
And then you're going to fill your belly up with my love and you're gonna go in there and talk to Negan.
Nice. Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy.
Got Simon Spunk in my tummy. Nom, nom, nom,
ooh,
nom.
You, we do.
Jesus.
Schweppy Schweppes. But yeah, so let's talk about this Al Capone. Very much an Untouchables Al Capone moment.
That's totally true. I didn't think about that.
Teamwork. teamwork. Fucking Robert De Niro.
Ba-kink, ba-kink, yeah. Just beating a dude.
Straight murder
the table.
A guy in public. It's just fine.
At a nice, like, white linen cloth, just a gathering.
Fucking 30s were nice. Good times.
That's good shit. But yeah, oh my God. I love this Gregory trying to pull out the, like, big put together diplomat act, and Negan just sees right through it. He's like, well, now I don't like killing people any more than you do. I like killing people. He's like, oh,
I like it. He just sits back all confident.
So good.
I like this. You know, this is something that I like about Negan that I've always liked about him as a bad guy goes, is that he is a wolf, man.
Oh, yeah.
He can see through you. He can read you. He knows your motives. He can see any weakness in you or any bullshit in you and just not have it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, he has a real keen sense that is his greatest strength. One of his greatest strengths is his keen sense of people. And we see it demonstrated throughout this episode, especially when he hands the gun back to Father G.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, to hand the gun back to Father G and for Father G not to just shoot you in the face and say, well, guess that's the war.
Yeah,
because he's read him in that short time enough to know that that's not going to happen.
Right.
That is a massive, massive gamble by Negan. So it shows confidence in his own insight and probably some arrogance too.
Mm.
But he doesn't make that same mistake with most people.
Right.
Right.
So what do you, I'm curious now that you've said that, what do you think about Negan's thoughts on Dwight at this point? Because one thing I liked about the scene is, you know, how early on when this, you know, this first scene of this meeting where Gregory's still talking to him, you know, Dwight's like, I'm gonna go out and get a smoke. And Negan kind of pushes him a little bit. He's like, oh, you don't want to hear this? And he's like, well, you know, you tell me where to go and what to do and I'll make it happen. I don't need to hear him tell me. And he just kind of, Negan laughs and just kind of like waves him off. I think that's a really interesting small interaction because I can't tell if Negan completely buys it or not. I think there's a part of Dwight having learned from Negan that this is exactly what Negan wants to hear. Hey, I don't care about this fucker. I'm executing orders for you. You're the one in charge. He's acknowledging that. And Negan's kind of like, okay. But then there's a part of me that thinks Negan's too smart to not have even a slight sense of this guy's maybe still trying to undermine him. And he's just kind of like, okay, and waves him off, but like takes a note of it, you know?
It is an interesting moment. I think it's really hard. I think Negan has survived as long as he had because he's good at sniffing out betrayal or possible insurrection.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I don't know, man, that's a tough call. So I like thinking about it from that angle. The other angle is thinking about it from Dwight's angle. Is this a really bad play by him? Because he's the guy.
Be. Yeah.
He's the guy. He's the turncoat they're looking for.
Yeah.
So why draw any attention to yourself whatsoever?
You stepping out of the room, not having an alibi anymore.
But then again, it is possible that this is regular Dwight behavior. And should he act differently, he draws attention to himself.
Right.
So maybe he's just being Dwight as Dwight is.
Got a burned face, hungry for a cigarette. Don't leave. Don't go.
I don't need. And it's also showing a total disregard for this idiot at the end of the table.
Yeah, which Negan has no regard for. It doesn't give respect.
Correct.
Whatsoever.
Neither does Negan. So I think he sort of understands Dwight's play here.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I would not be surprised if he suspects Dwight on some level. You can't fuck people. We said this before. You can't fuck people's girlfriends, wives, and not expect something to come back on you.
Unless you're an idiot.
Especially when we're in fucking make-believe apocalypse land where there's no law, right?
Yeah.
It's coming back on you. eventually. So you gotta, it's funny that we see that this is a weakness of Negan's, because it really is. If you have barbaric and draconic ways, but to take people's women from them, right? And is really, that's some barbaric primal. You're tapping into some serious chimpanzee DNA resistance.
You're breaking up couples. You're going to have, revenge. People are willing to die over that.
Right. Which means they're willing to blow you away and just know their life is forfeit.
Yeah.
Right. That's going to happen. So it's possible that even though I understand he uses it as a domineering dominance tool, it's still, man, it's a little risky. It's a risky fucking business. So this confession stuff that happens with Father G, I wonder how much of it is really supposed to highlight a weakness in him.
That's true.
It's interesting to think about. But yeah, I definitely think he suspects Dwight, which is why I think he went to Eugene.
Mm.
He knows Eugene's a coward, which means if there is a guy on the inside, Eugene becomes a target for
that guy
being flipped. Mm-hmm. Right? If you go into an organization and you're going to break it up and you see Eugene, now it's risky. He might turn you in right away because he's big chicken shit.
It's true. Yeah.
Right? He's a risky target, but he is a target. So I think it's also smart for Negan to go to him.
Yeah. And I think even if Negan is less aware than that, I think he still sees Dwight and Eugene both as like highest potential for liability, highest potential for them being up to something of anybody else there.
Sure.
And Simon, like, it's funny in this episode, that's something we need to talk about more too, is Simon in this episode is loyal almost to a fault. Like, I don't even, there are moments where I think the show wants us to think that, Simon would be the guy to maybe challenge Negan and try to do a coup. And like, I don't think he is. Like, he goes to the knee pretty quick. He's still, him doing all this stuff, trying to puff up Gregory and say, here, you got to, I believe you. You got to convince Negan, all that stuff. That's him being like supplicant to Negan. Like, he's still like trying to stay on Negan's good side. So I think Negan knows that. So it's like, as far as it comes to like suspicions of his own guys, I think that's almost squarely on both Dwight and Eugene. Like, those are the guys. He's like, these are the fuckers who are going to do something if anybody does.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff with Negan this week about, just him talking about Simon openly, like, how did this shit happen, right in front of everyone?
Yeah.
I thought about this. If you have an organization the size of Negan's and you guys are pretty certain somebody is betraying that organization, sometimes the best way to ferret out the traitor is to almost create a fake rift between you and a guy you actually do trust. And hope that person becomes a point of contact for the person who is doing the betrayal.
Tries to step up and exploit that further. And you're like, you're the guy.
Correct.
There you go.
Correct. Exactly. You take me and you, and then we got fucking Joey Blue. We're pretty sure Joey Blue's the guy, but we don't know. So I dress you down publicly to almost create a rift in us that's fake. Mm-hmm. I go to you privately, say, Matt, this is bullshit. We're trying to smoke this fucking guy out.
We got a mole.
We're going to smoke him out. Just play along. I'm going to embarrass you a little bit. Maybe he's going to try to contact you.
Insult me a little bit.
You insult me. Keep him here, Frankie. You keep him here, right? And that's what we do. And that's kind of a cool like counterintelligence play, right? And then the double fucking bluff counterintelligence is if you pretend and then you still backstab me. God damn, that's some deep spy shit.
This is deep role playing now.
But you know what I mean? That's what you do. Maybe you create a fake riff and try and draw him out.
Yeah.
Because Simon seems like it's important for Negan to make sure people understand that there are consequences, but you can't be if you fucking burn everyone's face off, then they're just not going to stand for it.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Can't burn everybody's face.
Can't burn everybody's face off cuz then you're fucking dead. You know. Yeah. But let's talk about, you want to just go right to Father G and the meat of the episode, the Father G Negan stuff?
I do. The last thing I want to say about this scene is
The bang and the bat on the table is awesome.
It's good. And to think about what set Negan off that makes him hit the table and get that mad, it's Simon's suggestion of, well, we'll just
ethnic
roll
cleansing.
Right. He's like, we'll just roll back into the hilltop with Gregory as a big show of force, and then we'll kind of be the enforcers behind him when he's like, anybody who doesn't stand with me doesn't stand with the saviors, and they gotta fucking leave. And if that doesn't work, well, we'll just fucking kill them all as a nice big public show to the rest of the communities. And that's when Negan shuts it down. It is like, no, people are a resource. And that, to me, is another big, that's actually a pretty big reveal as far as how Negan sees the world. It's like he has, and this is something I was thinking about a lot in this episode, like the ideas of power and how it's exercised and, you know, how Rick thinks about it, how Negan thinks about it, and his idea of being merciful and helping the weak and keeping things orderly and peaceful is with this kind of like wrathful force.
It's Dark Ages shit.
Yeah. But he, you know? But at the same time, he's protecting the idea. He's like, we're not just going around killing civilians. That's bullshit. We should not be doing that. And he's angry that his right-hand man even suggested it. And like, I think that's an interesting, that's an interesting thing for him to give up on.
In a very small sense, and we don't have to talk too much about this, but this is mirrored in the Daryl Rick thing.
Yeah.
Right?
It's true.
Yeah. It's interesting.
But yeah, let's hop over to the scene.
Go for it.
Our fucking boys in the trailer. Boys in the trailers. Yeah, so we cut right back into, this was, you know, the end of the season, opener of the season, was, you know, Father G getting into this trailer and Negan already being in there. Better get your shitting pants on. And I like how, as far, even though, you know, Father G, admirably so, has come so far as stepping up, not being a little puddle of shit, and just being able to fucking grow a spine, handle his shit, balance his faith with being able to be effective and fighting. I'm like, I admire him for all of that. I love it. Negan is so much more ready to go to like fast, unhesitating brute force that he's not ready for. Like he fucking tackles him in the scene like instantly and just takes him down, disarms him. You know, like he's no match for this kind of guy.
It's a mindset.
It totally, totally.
It's
and
a total
he's
mindset.
Still not quite there. Like Father G is not in that place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think he knows it pretty quickly with this physical confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Negan is capable of explosive violence.
Oh yeah.
And without hesitation, without warning. And that requires a certain mindset that Father G just might not have. Like, hey, we're going to assault this place. We're going to pop some fucking rounds off. Okay. I can get myself there mentally. Mm-hmm. But like that explosive go time.
Yeah. Kinda. There's a guy standing 5 feet away from me. And I need to go at him and kill him. Like that's, I don't think Father G's quite there yet.
Yeah. Most people aren't. So yeah. It's cool to see another thing that separates Negan in, is that explosive readiness.
Totally. Totally. And also, you know, this is something, you know, three watches I feel like of any episode in a while. I've combed this one over a lot. But one of the details I liked here too is that at first Negan, you know, when he disarms and he takes the pistol off and he's like, huh, you still got a full magazine here. You didn't even fire a shot. And he's like, well, there was no point. I wouldn't have done any difference. There's too many of them. And like, that's also true, but he's still like, well, you still could have gone down fighting your big baby. I actually like how that is a hint at a little undercurrent storyline of this episode that we don't realize until the very end that Father G was actually coming back to the sanctuary. That was actually trying to push into the sanctuary to get a hold of the doctor to bring him back for Maggie. Like he didn't want to just roll out of there and not accomplish anything. He wanted to go and get that doctor. Even if I think even if it meant he died, he wanted to get the doctor away from the sanctuary and back to them. That was his real mission in all of this. That's why he maintained a pistol that he could still use once he got inside, I think.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny that a guy like Father G's has arrived at this place both spiritually and mentally where he's really yearning for a sign, some sort of biblical sign.
Yeah.
And part of me is concerned with that because he might read signs everywhere. You know, when you're looking or you know, it's one of those things where if it's just in his mind, he might see him everywhere and misinterpret innocuous things as signs and make wrong decisions.
Right, right.
You know what
exactly
I'm saying?
Exactly what you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
He's over-interpreting the world.
Right. I don't know. I guess we'll see. But yeah, by the way, 15 minutes before the...
Yeah, that was interesting. Like I've
never seen that before in
no,
the show.
No, me neither. Well, not that I remember.
Mm. But yeah, they're in the thing. I like the way they shoot this. I like the way we have the hands on it. On the undead hands
on the windows
and they're sitting there talking.
It is so dark. Like just the lighting in this episode is so incredibly dark. And there's a lot of, you know, the windows have these blinds that are casting these little horizontal light shadows, you know, across Negan's face. I mean, the way this was lit and the way it looks, the way that they're just, having to be at an uncomfortable like truce. Like I really enjoyed that whole setup.
Yeah. Why do you think there's anything to be said for making it as dark as they did?
For one, to put our focus specifically on like their eyes, their faces. And there are certain scenes like
I agree.
Like the one scene where Negan finally does kind of have his confession, I like how much his face is still pretty obscured. Like you can make out the profile of his face, the outline of it, and you can kind of start to tell when his face is changing, but it's still not all there. And
I think that's a very good, that's another compliment to this episode. I think that's a good decision
mm-hmm.
because we don't want to see close-up, bright and shiny Negan Payne.
No.
Because people are going to rebel against that immediately and go, oh, fucking dumb. They're trying to... In this, it's sort of in the shadows. It's sort of hidden. It's implied that he feels something for what he's saying, but only he knows because only he's being... Nobody's witnessing it. Like I said, it's the de facto sort of confession privacy screen here.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that was another good choice versus him just out in the open and everyone seeing his face and... I liked that it's still sort of his own secret, the way it affects him by looking at his face. We are pretty confident he's not lying as an audience.
I think so.
Father G seems confident, but he doesn't really know, and nobody else for sure knows this at all.
No way.
Which is cool. It's cool that it ended up being Father G in the position.
Yeah. And I think that's why Negan ends up being honest in a weird way,
sure.
because Father G is a priest. Like, he actually is. He's wearing the collar still. Like, as much as, you know, that might be easy to scoff at in the show. I think people, oh, he's still wearing his fucking priest uniform. Like, I like that he still maintained that. And I think that has a subconscious...
That means something, yeah.
Totally. It has a subconscious effect on Negan. That he kind of... It isn't just some guy who's like, hey, you should confess. You should have... You should make peace with this and be, you know, expose your vulnerabilities and your weakness. This is a priest. It means something different when it's coming from him.
Just like Negan wears a motorcycle jacket. I have a baseball bat, right? That whole thing.
Big balls of steel.
Yep. Dick and balls, dick and balls, dick and balls. I'm Negan.
Dick, 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 dick. Wieners, wieners. That's him.
Guy talks about dick more than Andrea Ramos.
Gives her a run for her money, though.
Motherfuckers. So she hears that. Yeah, so there you go. But what ends up happening here between these two guys is they talk a lot. They talk about the guidance. We get a little bit of inkling into him. He's Negan's one of those I sort of believe in the ruling class and wielding power and controlling people because we're all fucking useless animals in
yes.
a sense.
Yeah, he is a very authoritarian. Humans are animals, mm-hmm. and they'll resort to their baser instincts quickly unless there's something
little faith in humanity.
Yeah, like the note I took was I'm like, if Negan wrote a political theory book, it would be like his political idea could be summed up as the biggest monster in the room philosophy. That his sense of enforcing a kind of morality to make the world actually more orderly, more safe, more peaceful. Is to be the biggest, scariest monster that keeps all the other monsters in line. With it, it keeps them from acting like monsters because he's so big and scary and nobody wants to step out of line. Like that's
dictatorship.
Totally. 100% authoritarian.
Yeah. There is not much room for liberty in the totalitarian fucking Negan regime.
Not really.
But yeah, it's, I started to take guesses, school teacher, principal.
I think that's pretty good.
Some
guess.
Sort of administration.
Sounds, yeah, a principal. That's
I don't see
good.
Him answering to people.
Right.
Like I see him being the top dog in whatever he did.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe even like he says all he ever says to the whole idea, like, oh, how did you help weak people when you were, you know, before this? And he's like, help kids. He just mentions kids. I there's a part of me that wonders like child psychologist even or something like that.
Oh, shit.
Like I don't know. Because we've talked about it before. Like, I feel like he has at least some level of background in, like, psychology or behavioral, you know, analysis or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. There are sociopaths in all walks of life. They don't just gravitate towards certain things, you know. It's interesting to think about. I could see a fucking school principal maybe being a sociopath.
Yeah.
Why not? Anyone else could be. It's like 15, 20% of people exhibit these behaviors. So like he could be from anything. I just wonder, like there was speculation maybe it was sales, right?
Oh, that's right.
Because he can read car people salesman. So well. Yeah, but I don't know. You know, it's tough to say. But some sort of the way he talks about government and ruling and that kind of stuff. I don't know.
I mean, he has the quote, "If my people think I'm dead, a lot of folks are going to die in there." And that's both, I think that says two important things, is that
his sense of self-worth is very high.
Very high. And also his thoughts on other people are that they're, like we've already said, like they're kind of low, like they can't really control themselves. But also the weirder thing is that it shows a pretty high level of empathy too. It's not like he's the kind of leader who's like, once things go shitty, he's like, oh, abandon ship, fuck all my people. I just want to get away from me. Like, he does want to get back there and make sure that things stay in order. Like, his people don't go and start killing each other and don't start to go into chaos. He wants to keep order, like in this really above self kind of way, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it's possible. It's also possible that his desire for order comes from knowing that he is the one who establishes and makes all the rules for that
order. It's to enjoy the benefits of that order.
Correct. Yeah. He's the guy at the top. So, of course, order is wonderful to him because he is the guy at the top of that chain. So there's no, there's really, he can do what he wants. He runs it. There's also the narcissism of thinking only you can do it, right? This is going to be, place will be a shithole without me. Basically, he thinks that. Mm-hmm. That's a funny thing to think. But he's not wrong. So he knows his people pretty well. I also think he's smart enough to know he can't probably survive alone. He needs this big group. Yeah. And if I can sit at the top of this group, but yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Sitting at the top of the group is always a lot better than just being alone in the wild.
Pretty for sure. You pissing your pants. Yeah.
Rob Z in the chat. He was an overacting coach.
Yeah, that's true.
Before the zombie outbreak. Shit. I love Jeffrey Dean Morgan, though. I'll never hate the guy.
Me too.
Oh, holy shit. I got to read that one, too, from Bootsy Rosenweig in the chat. Vice principals often are in charge of discipline. Maybe he was a psychopathic vice principal who coached. That also sounds pretty possible.
There you go.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, young people, to say young, but that could be anything. It could be, he could have been a fucking college
kids.
Professor.
Well, he says kids, though. He says specifically kids.
True.
I'm like, man, what does that mean? Watch him be like, we get some cut flashback, and he's like a preschool daycare, like, he's like changing babies' diapers. And he's like, oh, go, just go to sleep, sweet babies. And as soon as the outbreak happens,
this little piggy went to market. He's got like a sweater on.
As soon as the outbreak happens, he's like, well, fuck it. And just starts wrapping barbed wire on a baseball bat. Like, well, okay, then. That's the guy I am now. Fuck it. Fuck these babies.
You see him like, there's like a shit goes south. He's in the school. It's like a faculty meeting. He just fucking murders everyone in there, takes all their lunches. Like, I guess I should start stocking up.
Man, how many tuna sandwiches this place has?
Fucking salad again, Sandy? How many salads can you eat?
I'm going to stuff this salad into your busted head.
I could see him doing something like that. Like, just all of a sudden, he's got those big horn-rimmed glasses on, you know, those fucking shithead professors all wear. They all wear them, right? Mm-hmm. And then you just see him just take them off, and that's it. He takes the glasses off, and that's it.
And he kills the same biker that the Terminator in Terminator 2 killed. Takes his fucking jacket.
That's it.
All of a sudden. Your motorcycle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Negan now. Yeah.
You're going to need your little jacket, your motorcycle, and your Louisville.
Your Louisville slugger.
The toothpick of a weapon. But I guess, I don't know, maybe that's what happens. That'd be cool. You want to talk about Negan's confession? We're kind of running the whole Negan thing right now. I don't know. We're jumping all over.
I was going to say, do you want to just go ahead, since it's so much shorter, and honestly, I think there's a lot less meat on the bone.
Yes.
Just going to dive through Daryl and Rick's old lover's quarrel.
Yeah, what'd you think about that?
Daryl, stop. Get off me, Daryl. Squeeze me harder. I'm not going to lie. You know what? In the moment when
Where's the dynamite, Rick? Where is it? Where's the jar? You wouldn't give it to nobody.
But,
I fired you, Mr. Daryl. I fired you.
I fired you. I blew up your dynamite.
I fired you, Mr. Daryl.
Dynamite the size of a tangerine. But no, the actual disagreement, the actual, you know, them going at each other,
so
I liked
it. I got this right?
Okay.
Daryl's like, we got dynamite now. I want to blow him away. That's what he wants to do?
Basically, he wants to go in, blow up, you know, maybe the lower level or the remaining fences even further, let the place completely fill through. Like,
yeah, destroy them all, right?
Like, they've already taken down the fence, so their perimeter's gone, and the whole place is swarmed with zombies all around, pressing up against the walls and the doors of the place. I think Daryl wants to blow a hole in the actual building now and just let zombies pour in through there. And mm-hmm. he's like, and then they'll surrender. They'll surrender. It'll be over by tonight. And that's when, you know, Rick's counterpoint is like, well, you're the one.
Workers in there. Won't be fine workers. A fucking arm wave. We find the fucking workers in there, Daryl. Fucking arm wave.
I hold my gun up and point with it. Point with the top of my wrist.
Yes, he holds the gun, but yet he points with his wrist.
Hey, fucking. Mm.
It's so stupid, but he does it.
It's ridiculous.
Stop pointing with your wrists.
I also kind of love it, though.
It's such a Rick thing.
So Rick, Rick's, yeah. It's,
come on, people.
Come on, we got to go over there. Gotta go over there.
Careful. I shot myself in the foot doing this.
Ah, shit.
I don't know what he's doing, but.
But, yeah, I mean, his whole counterpoint is that you're the one who told us that there's families in there. It's not just a place. It's not just a building full of biker, murderer scum who love Negan. Like, they have essentially slaves, men, women, and children who are just there being forced to do labor. And he's like, we blow a hole in the place and fill it full of zombies. It's going to kill a lot of innocent people. Should we do that? And Daryl's basically like, fuck it, whatever. They put them in that position. We're just the guys pulling the trigger, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat a squirrel and blow this place up.
Is that man petting his goat or is he planting an IED? Well,
hit him with a rocket.
Can never be too safe. No, but seriously, so there's good points on both sides of this argument. I want to talk about the Daryl side of it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So Rick decided it's fucking war. Fucking going to war up there.
I'm going to gesture with my wrist right over there.
We're going to fucking go to war over there. Fucking point with his wrist. Going to fucking point my wrist over there. We're going to fight him over there. We're going to fight him everywhere because we're Rick and Co.
Oh, yeah.
But no, listen. So Rick wanted to start a war with a group of people that he knows have a bunch of family and friends around them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like he's already kind of at the party, right? It's not like you have U.S. military technology. Like when you're like, we're going to go to Vietnam, you know civilians are going to get mixed up in that.
Yeah.
When you're like, we're going to blow people away in Afghanistan, we're just going to kill insurgents and bad guys and terrorists, and we're going to use drones to try to make that and see and spy, you still know there's going to be collateral damage. So Rick has to know on some level, especially with the limited tech and surveillance, if we attack Negan's compound,
yeah,
we know there's children and families there, but we've kind of went to war with him. So how do you discern enemy from a fucking guy just picking cabbage trying to make it? You know what I mean? How can you tell him apart?
And how can you have, you know, especially like the way we see it, like Negan and all of his upper guys are just now hunkered down inside of this place. So like, how are you going to push him out of there? Like what's your next offensive move? Like the part of me that sides with Daryl is like, yeah, like you got to have at some point with it, you can't go to war without any idea of what the end game is. Like what is the final coup de grace blow that's going to end this? And what does that look like? What does that mean? What are we going to need? And you know, for them, I think the obvious is like, well, we have to destroy the sanctuary. Like we have to hit them where they live. We got to take out Negan. We got to take out his lieutenants. They got to be gotten. You got to get them or you haven't gotten the thing. You know, you got to take out the heart of it. But I get that, you know, it's pretty tempting when you have a big bag full of just tons of explosives to be like, well, here we go.
Force multipliers for days.
Yeah, here's my big sledgehammer that we can just whack them with and it's done. Let's just do it now. Pretty fucking tempting. But I do still, I falter more back to Rick of like, and you know, and Rick's point is not just that, oh, we could kill all these innocent people, or there could be, you know, collateral.
It's making more bad guys.
He's saying, yeah, he's like that, you know, a lot of them right now are probably just held in some kind of neutral place of like, well, I have shelter here, I have food, even though it's pretty shitty, they treat us kind of awful, but we have our basic necessities. I'm more scared of being out in the world than I am in here. Fuck it. But if you come in as an outside force and start attacking and killing everybody, that could, you know, quote unquote, radicalize them. And they're like, well, fuck it. I'll take up guns with the people who've been at least looking out for me. Now you have that many more soldiers.
It definitely makes sense, but they're kind of already doing it. Like when they attack the ammo depot and they kill, you know, Jimmy fucking ammunition, he's got a fan. He might have a fan.
Not Billy Bullets. Oh, fuck.
Billy Pulitzer's bleeding out.
Wait, where's Manny Melonhead? Oh, God, did they get to Manny Melon? Oh, somebody pushed their thumb right through his forehead.
I'm fucking dying. I'm fucking dying. You're not going to die. Say the fucking words.
Right? That's what's happening.
My precious melon juice is leaking out. I'm fucking dying. You worried about your fucking ear?
So, but you know, but that's my point. Johnny Bullets gets blown away. Maybe he's got a girlfriend and a 10-year-old in that place. Uh-huh. I mean, you, every time you attack him, it's like, ugh, you're gonna, you have this. Yeah. So maybe Rick just wants more precision striking. I mean, he wants more precise targets.
Yeah. I mean, I think in Rick's mind, but the problem is, I think I know what Rick wants to do, but I don't think he has a clear strategy of how to get there. I think Rick wants to pull the fighters and he wants to have Negan and the fighters step outside of the, you know, come out of the pond.
Yeah, he wants to have a good old fashioned fucking okay and, corral.
Right. Your boys line up over here and mine line up here. First volley is yours, sir. Yes.
Why are you hiding in the trees?
Silly Americans, that's not how you do war.
Why are you fighting us from the woods? You dirty bushwhackers.
Savages.
Line up with our superior numbers and firepower.
Put your tallywhacker back in your pants. That's not war.
Don't be so dishonorable. Line up against way more men than you with better guns. You cowards.
Surrender to death.
So stupid. Oh, I don't know. But that's what's happening. What Rick wants to do is he wants to smash them hard enough to where these people are won over and want to integrate into Rick society. Mm-hmm. Right? You know what he needs?
We got stuff. We got things. We got things over here. We got stuff over there.
We got a great barber. Oh, no, wait. She died.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry. Damn. Sorry, Tara. Fuck.
We got Rosita.
Oh, shit. She got shot, too. Damn. I'm sorry.
Damn. Well, no. What he needs is to do is he needs a... what's the word I'm looking for? He needs a propaganda campaign. You know, like the leaflets over Dunkirk.
Just gonna say that.
Except it shows like a picture of Negan in handcuffs with a broken bat, no more. And then it's like it shows a bat smashing a head, and it's like a no more sign on
no
it.
No more.
No more bats and heads. It's like Rick handing people flowers and like so pizzas. That's the leaflets. Oh, everyone's equal.
It's totally true.
Dude, if he had a weather balloon that he could dump propaganda, they would just turn on him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, and this is also, you know.
It'd be like Dunkirk. Oh, maybe they're fucking right. Maybe we do surrender. I don't want to face another round of Stuka dive bombers. Maybe we just give up here, mate.
They already chipped me teacup. I don't know what else to do.
Burn. Oh, maybe it doesn't sound so bad. A German prison camp.
I mean, we are white people.
It's not like we're Czechoslovakia. They'll treat us all right.
They won't just shoot us and throw us in a ditch.
They won't bury us with bulldozers.
Shit. Oh, the brave men of Dunkirk. We thank you.
But that's what it would be. They would have to drop leaflets over fucking...
Oh, shit.
Over the Savior compound. That's what they would have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's the thing. Like, I think that is what, you know, Rick really does want, kind of, you know, in a sense, like an old-fashioned engagement. He wants to pull them out of there to be like, let's fucking go to war, last man standing, that's that. And the civilians stay behind, everybody's civilians stay at home, you know, because Rick does that. You know, he leaves it, you know, some people who could fight, but he tells them they're going to stay at home. We're going to take our only this people or blah, blah, blah. Whereas I think as far as the saviors go, everybody goes out to fight unless you're like one of our fucking slaves. And you're like, nah, you stay here and you pick, you know, you pick the weeds. Like that's all you do.
Yeah.
So
that'd be cool though if you could fuck them up and then you got like a bunch of bullhorns. That'd be just so rad. We will not, like through the bullhorn, that cool sound effect.
That'd be so dope. Like,
after they fucking blast them, they're just like, we do not execute people with bats. We are here to liberate you. It'd be some badass like freedom speech.
See?
That'd be dope with bullhorns just driving around, like yelling for savior people to turn on Negan. And then he's like all shell-shocked and he's losing men.
I fucking want this.
That'd be dope, right?
You know what I want too? I think the other, I was just writing it down. I think the other component of this, you know, because so right now, one thing, you kind of see it from the outside a little bit, but there's a lot of this episode that's very much, you know, like I was saying earlier, kind of jokingly, but half seriously too. It's like 12 Angry Men. It's like we're sitting around
the one
table.
Where they think he's guilty because he's a black guy.
Right, he must have, right?
He must have. He's kind of brown.
I mean, come on.
He definitely stabbed him.
It's the 50s. Everybody smoke. but yeah, like the thing that we have to remember is that their entire compound right now is swarmed in zombies. Like the reason we see the lieutenants and everybody in there, and they're not alpha on engagements fighting Rick people, like because they're stuck in there. Like they're having to shut down their electricity. They're having to conserve fuel. They're having to do all this shitty stuff because they're trapped and they can't go outside to handle anything. I think if Rick and company rolled back in the same way they did, bullhorns in tow, you know, both shouting out the message like, hey, we're here to help. We want to take, if you are tired of living under the thumb of Negan and his people, we're wanting here to help you. And while they're doing that, they're clearing out the zombies. They come back in and they start clearing the zombies for them and making a pathway for people to leave. Dude, I think you win your hearts and your minds. I think that might be the way.
Yep.
I mean, try it out. We've got a good country. We've got beautiful blonde women. And
Yeah.
Should try it out. A great it's beers, fair. Good soccer.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah. Good beer.
Come on. We'll put you in the workouts. The Austrian government.
It's like coming.
All day. You see the girls, the blonde girls from Germany be like, ah, yeah, yeah. Then you sign the surrender papers. It's okay.
It's good.
It's good for you. Do you don't want to eat shitty meat pies with crappy weather and ugly women with no teeth? Come on, join the Nazi party.
Join it. Do it.
Do it now. Why is he a Nazi? This is terrible.
Because he has that accent. Yeah.
That's it.
And we're reductionists.
We are. We are reductionists.
Oh, shit.
Anyway. But that's it. I like it. Let's move over to their fist fight.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it. You know, I
like Daryl's rebellion.
Yeah,
because it does something interesting with Daryl for a change. And I know it's not super interesting, but Daryl doesn't usually ever tell Rick to fuck off and then punch him
and
in the face.
Punch him in the face. Yeah.
I like it. Daryl's sick of this shit.
Yeah,
it's good to see Daryl have. Be something other than a tool to be implemented.
Right. And it's a payoff to him. I mean, he's the only one of their crew. Everybody has experienced hardships or loss or some pain due to the saviors at this point. Everybody has dealt with it. Daryl's the only person who is tortured for weeks on end. Fucking tort left naked in a box being, you know, with psychological torture all day, starved, fucking beaten by these dudes. I could totally see at this point, like, him still in his mind being like, yes, Rick, you're my brother, and I respect you, but I fucking hate them so much more than I love and respect you right now. Like, I gotta go kill these guys, then we can get back to being brothers and being all comrade-y, blah, blah, blah. I need to kill these fucks. Like, hate-driven right now. He totally, and it's believable. It makes sense. I'm like, of course he would. Of course he'd be this angry. He's also Daryl, so yeah.
That's a good point. So their fight is, you know, they did their little fight. They got a little
headlock.
Got a little headlock, a little chokehold through for pussy or something.
There, come on now.
Rick, you better learn how to grapple. Definitely boy, learn how to grapple.
Get that dude. Ground game up, boy.
get that ground
game up.
Fucking Daryl be choking you, strangling you out. Him and Merle doing that backyard wrestling shit.
Definitely backyard
wrestling.
Oh, yeah. You know Daryl's got that corn-fed, I broke my arm in my makeshift backyard octagon fucking boy strength.
It was a cage match. I went off the roof onto the pool deck. Cage match. Definitely did that shit.
My above ground pool.
Yep. They made their own intercontinental fucking championship belt.
Fuck yeah.
They had walkout music.
Oh, yeah.
Foreign objects, no doubt.
Daryl Dixon! Bah, bah, da, da,
bah. Probably Allman Brothers. I'm going to walk the free bird.
I'm going to walk the bat. Whipping pole.
I don't know. But, yeah, man. So, what'd you think? Was it a little stupid? Was it a little dumb to lose the weapons that way?
Can you not?
Is that too hard?
We have to.
It's a little dumb.
Yeah, I think you've gotten too used to hating every episode.
I've been so good this
week.
You've
been so good this time. It's true.
We're
it is
an
true.
Hour in. I'm in such a good boy.
I like, you know what? I actually liked the
accent. Can I call one part stupid?
Okay, here you go. Here's your
Thank
stupid.
You. Give me my stupid
little
snacks.
A little, stupid, little stupid over here.
Give me my stupid crunchies. Just let me have a couple of stupid crunchies.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
But I like Rick.
They wanted to get rid of the fucking weapons.
There was a part of me that wanted, I wanted that to last longer. I wanted the dynamite to be a, I don't know, a crux of this their story of the rest of this episode for kind of up until the end. I kind of wanted that, but I don't mind Rick just grabbing them and hurling them away. Because I don't think Rick knew that, you know, it's not like he saw the truck was already on fire. He just threw them and then saw that the truck was catching on fire because it was, you know, wrecked. And that's when he, like, I actually like the moment a lot when they're fucking fighting and Rick has to be like, Daryl, like tapping him out, being like, look, look, look. And, you know, and then Daryl, of course, stops and like helps him up and they both run away. Like, sure. That was cool. I love that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that was a badass fucking explosion, too. That was actually, that looked really good.
Yeah. I don't want to get rid of the weapons. I told you, we need a goddamn weapons. Yep. Now he's going to have to strike from the shadows with karate and expensive gadgets and gizmos with his new Batman voice.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, all right. So that's done. No more weapons.
Well, and to wrap it up completely, we see a little bit of, all right, Daryl, I'm going to head. I'm going to finish this mission. You come in.
Yes.
No, I'm not. He rides off on his motorcycle. Rick keeps walking after being like, you know, Daryl was like, are you sure you're going to go through with this? And he's like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And he keeps walking. Sees a fucking helicopter fly overhead. Which
that was
a,
wild.
It was wild.
Interesting, too.
Yeah, it was a nice little bit of mystery where you're like, who the fuck out here? Like, that's not the saviors. Like, they don't have a helicopter. That's not like they had some secret. I'm 90% sure that's not some secret outpost of the saviors that had a helicopter. I think it's somebody
Black
else.
Black helicopters.
Camtrails.
I've seen the documents,
FEMA
Matthew.
Camps.
They've been declassified.
Barack Hussein Obama.
Can you produce a birth certificate? No.
Except that you did. But I just don't.
MK Ultra. The lizards. They're lizards and they're after your children.
Gay frogs. But yeah, no, I loved that moment. That was, and like, I loved also too, like this far into this world, like this many years, this many things. When Rick looks up and sees it, he's both, I think, like us, like, holy shit. But he's not like, oh, hell, he's just kind of like, huh. Well, okay. And just like keeps going. Like he knows there's nothing he can do. He's not wowed by it. He's just like, that's strange. Who the fuck still has an operating helicopter with fuel? But then he continues on. And all we see is that Mad Max looking dude in his tower with his little leather straps and his little nipple piercings, I guess.
I think he just found some sort of convention. There's a bunch of nerds in there.
No, exactly.
Playing dress up.
LARPing convention out in the middle.
He's here.
We just thought the rest of the world was LARPing as hard as we were.
How much to get in?
$49.99. You still use money? The fuck?
Yeah, that could be it.
But I'm pretty sure that's the old garbage people. That's
you think so, yeah?
I mean,
hair looks like a garbage person's hair.
Garbage hair, garbage clothes.
He definitely looks like you rub some like old filet of fish wrapper on his head to get that grease.
Get that Skeet Ulrich.
Definitely. Look. Super drippy. Fucking fry later head hair.
Exactly.
Ugh. You know those, you know when they smell like the restaurant?
I worked at a KFC combination Long John Silvers.
Mm.
Bad times.
God, that smell of KC in the car.
Can't get rid of it. Can't get rid of it.
Can't get rid of it. You're trying to get a hand job from your girl. It just smells like Big Macs in the car. You're fucking kicking Big Mac fucking boxes. Trying to get your fucking pants off.
Shit.
I think the cops are coming. Oh, no, they're not. Anyway, I don't fucking know about that. So, yeah, he finds the Mad Max camp of garbage people.
Yeah. And that's it. That's all of Rick.
Do they have a contentious relationship?
Oh, yeah. You don't remember? So, I mean,
he's lucky he's not getting sniper shot. I mean, she's a little whimsical about life. She might just be like, throw him in with the lion.
Yeah. Like, the caged zombies we have.
Yes.
But no, they completely turncoated on them in last season's, you know, season finale.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they thought that they were, you know, on Rick and Company's side and providing the guns, and they completely completely just turncoated. And I think all she said was, better deal. Like, she had a better deal with Negan and them.
And then Shiva showed up and everyone shit their pants. And they took off.
And they fucking bounced. But so he hasn't had any contact with them since then. And I think he's coming in, cause, you know, he's looking at it from like the hard, just cold capitalist point of view of like, all right, they want a better deal. Let's make them a better offer and buy back their loyalty. That's my theory as far as like, he's just going to go in there and try to, okay, you guys, money talks. All right, we're not using money anymore, but we're going to figure out how to make a better arrangement than the Saviors also have with you, convince you that we're going to win this war that we're already engaging in, and try to get their support back, I guess.
China wants a bang, Rick. What if that's on the table as part of the negotiation?
I mean, I'm down. Yeah. I'm down. Boy, God help you, Michonne doesn't fucking find out because she's going to chop Rick's fucking dick off with her katana.
What if she's a, what if, she's got to, she might have to stand on the sidelines on this one.
Then you know what that means? You know what that means, though.
Mm.
She gets a free pick. She gets a freebie. She gets to pick anybody. And you know what? She's going to piss off Rick. She's going to be like,
Negan.
Daryl. Oh. Give me that grimy dick. That grimy country boy rager. Yeah. Give me that. I'm going to fucking ride the shit out of him, Rick. God, you're going to go fuck that skinny white bitch in the garbage camp.
Give me that fucking dirty fucking swamp log dick. Gross, man. That nasty old Florida Everglades dick.
You know she would make him come into their house and be like, you fucking shower first, though. You're my pick, but you're going to go shower off. Here's a loofah. Fucking nasty.
God, I can't imagine anything worse.
Oh, shit. So that's the Rick and Daryl storyline.
Daryl takes his pants off. She's like, why does it smell like the French Quarter in 1826? Jesus Christ.
I think I got syphilis from the smell.
Daryl, you gave me cancer when you took your pants off. Thanks. Anyway, so yeah, we see the garbage pail lookout guy. He looks like he kind of wants to be David Bowie or something. I don't know what he is. But back to, want to do the confession and sort of...
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, I want to wrap with that.
Oh, and you know, one other quick thing. I do want to talk about this.
Oh, the thing in the hallway?
Well, I was going to talk about the just kind of the meeting scene briefly. There's not too much that's super interesting. It's just, like I was saying at the top of the show, I like the meeting scene between, you know, all of Negan's lieutenants without a Negan. Like, Negan's not around. And I think it's, what's her name? Regina, who's like, so...
Loves dicks.
Loves it.
Loves them.
Oh,
tons. Got a... That whole treasure chest full.
Conquered severed penises. but no, she's the one who's like, so we should assume Negan's dead, right? Like, this is, we're in a post Negan saviors now, right? And you know, Simon's kind of trying to put the kibosh on him. Like, no, you know, we don't know about that, blah, blah. But trying to keep order. But one of the lines I liked a lot, this is where Eugene brought some suspicion down on himself because Regina was like, well, we just go ahead and take our workers, get 40 of them, give them pipes, give them some sticks and saltines or whatever they fucking need and shove them out there into the zombies. Oh, I'll make them do it. And Eugene's like, that's not going to work. They're going to get overwhelmed and die. That's
Operation Human Meat Shield.
Right. And she's even like, she's so cold and calculated. Like, you can tell this is how most of the, you know, Negan's people think, his, you know, fighters anyways. She's like, well, yeah, whatever. They're a distraction. But that's when we actually take another team and go around and try to find, you know, Negan or whatever. But Eugene kind of like pokes the hole in that and is like, that's not going to work. They're going to be overwhelmed. We're going to lose it. And she starts kind of coming down hard on him. And Dwight stands up for him. He's like, he's right. That's not going to work. And he also points out the fact that we can't start, especially right now with the vulnerable position that we're in, putting our workers on the chopping block as like sacrificial lambs of like, oh, well, you just go out here and die for us. Like, he's mm-hmm. like, he says we have to keep them on our side. And that's when Simon says we have to keep them in line, which totally different way of thinking about this and valuing lives and thinking about people and power, all of that. Like, that's, there's a lot laid out in those two lines.
I like that they're not total fuckwits, but they're still not, they still lack the leadership necessary to run the sanctuary effectively.
Yeah.
Which goes right to Negan's point about how they're going to fall apart without him.
Yeah, right.
It's cool. Like, we can't show me totally bumbling fucksticks because that's just really unrealistic.
Totally.
They have to have some competency, but not to make these large scale important decisions, only to carry out appointed tasks that require a lot of muscle or cleverness.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. But I like that. I like that whole scene here. This, you know, the what do Negan's top people do without him? That was cool.
So let's talk about the confession. Let's talk about the confrontation in the hallway that, of course, Negan breaks up, and the Negan guts, and then of course the Eugene running into Father G being sick.
Ah, that's right.
Interesting. Oof. So, what do you think about it, man?
Negan's confession?
Yeah.
I like it a lot. Like I said, this is my standout favorite scene here. And I even like, you know, the lead up into this where it was basically Father G rattling off all of the things. Are these things you'd want to maybe confess for?
Well, it starts with him disclosing his own.
Right. Well, that's in the actual
cement the trust of.
Yes. But before that, it's where he's like,
oh, yeah.
You've killed people, you've enslaved them. He's like, no, no, but. And then he brings up, what about all those women you forced to be their wives? And that you can see.
He pauses.
Yeah. He pauses and turns away from him. He can't look at him. Like, that affects him. And he turns away and very unconvincingly is like, all those women chose to do that. And he was like, really? Like, they just chose to do that. Which also is like such a. He knows, like, Negan is smart enough to know that he's bullshitting in that moment. That, like, the choice they made was not a choice. You extorted them. You were going to kill them and their boyfriend unless they decided to be your fucking concubine. Like, that's not a choice. That's not an act of free will.
Yeah, it's not like he offered them a fucking multi-million-dollar movie life. You know? Like a real human would do.
Like a real producer.
Like a real stand-up guy would do. Give him a fucking career and a big house in the hills.
Here we go.
Like a real nice guy.
Now we're talking.
Right? Right? Those fucking guys are angels compared to this animal.
This fucking psychopath. But no, I like how that stings him. I like what that reveals as far as he feels some guilt about it. And he feels guilt specifically about, and I think this is kind of alludes to his past some more, about women and kids. Like that's something that's actually still sensitive for him. Like he when he is pointed out as being cruel to women or children, that starts to affect him and bother him. He doesn't like that. And that's also the scene where I love that Father G goes and yanks the fucking gun out of his waistband and goes for it. I was like, fuck yeah, Daddy G. That was some good shit. I mean, you fucked it all up. Like, you are not... You fucked up. You're nowhere near as martial as fucking Negan. But just the fact that he had the balls to go for it, I was like, damn, dude, that was nice. And that's when
you have to believe that you are about to engage in an activity that could cost you your life.
Yeah, like this could be
so it. When you engage in that activity that could cost you your life, you're probably going to be nervous. You're going to be a little shaky, Mary. And then that's what happens. You get your ass beat.
Beat down. But he still manages, you know, another zombie is already breaking through one of the barriers at that point. You know, it's getting its arms through. And, you know, Father Jesus that moment to get into the other room. Get away from Negan, and then they have a little separation of a door, and then that's what leads into our whole confession proper.
Mm. Yeah, but it starts. Well, he tells him about the people in the congregation,
and that dude, man. See, this is a moment I really liked as far as the writing goes. As far as we know this, like this is not new information for us as the audience, for Walking Dead viewers, like we. This is how we found Father G. We found him on a rock outside his church with scraped in words of like, you betrayed us. You left us here to die. Like, we learned this backstory for him very early on. We've known it for a long time now. But hearing him, I think I could be wrong on this because I feel like, you know, I don't think so. I think this is the first time we've ever heard him like vocalize it and actually like describe what he did and talk about it. Like, because Rick and company kind of pieced it together. I think Rick confronted, I'm trying to remember, but I think Rick confronted him with the information of like, you left people out here to die. Like, you barred yourself in here and people were out here trying to get in. Like, he confronted him with that fact. He never
somebody
admitted
definitely did.
It.
Yeah, I don't remember the details, but.
Yeah, and so this is the first time we're seeing, you know, Father G himself be like, I failed them.
Not just that, but having a vast polarity shift on our perception of the guy.
Totally.
In the beginning, we're like, fuck this guy. This piece of shit.
Yeah.
Now we're like, this is heavy.
It's heavy. Yeah, this
you
poor,
think about it.
Poor haunted bastard. Like,
yeah, you think about it differently a little bit.
Totally. And I love it. I love how he's the first one. You know, one of the cool things I like about this whole setup is that he has that whole smirk right before we actually get our finally, you know, opening credit sequence when he's like, maybe this is why I was kept alive. Maybe this is why God kept me alive. For you to give a confession to me. But he's the first one to confess. He wants to confess.
Indeed.
He wants to speak that aloud and say, I did this. I fucked up. I failed these people. I was a coward. And I want to make up for it. Every single day, I'm wanting to do better, you know, to make something positive in the world, to foster life instead of being so responsible for so much death. And he confesses that to Negan first. And, dude.
Horrible, Negan, cowardly, spineless shit.
That is
That's
so
funny, man.
Horrible, cowardly, spineless shit you did.
So good.
So, because I'm like, you're right. Like,
you're not wrong.
You're totally right. Like, I love Father G at this point, but you are definitely right.
It's awesome. Oh, man. But he lays it down, talks about his wife, wife that he cheated on before she was sick, while she was sick.
Yeah, my first wife, my real wife, the only real wife I ever had. You know, fucked around on her, you know, before the apocalypse, and then she got sick. And was
That's
sick.
Hardcore, man.
Yeah, sick all the way through the apocalypse and I guess died of it post, you know, zombie outbreak and when there's no way to access medicine. That's heavy. That's pretty fucking heavy. And what he specifically confesses for, though, is not the fact that he fucked around on his wife, not this and that. It's that he couldn't put her down, that he couldn't do her the, like, I don't know what you would call it, like the honor, the mercy,
grace.
The grace of just putting her to rest, not letting her become a zombie. That's what haunts him the most. Specifically, it's like he already, I feel like he knows that, like, fucking around on his wife and everything was bad, but he's already made peace with those aspects of it. It's the
in a sense.
Yeah, it's like I didn't have strength to be an honorable man and, like, end her, you know, zombie resurrection. You know, he didn't have the guts to do that. And that's, I think, what bothers him the most. And he chokes up in this scene, man. Like, he's hiding it. You can tell he pauses and, like, fights it back so that his voice doesn't change, so that Father G can't realize
sure.
he's choking up. Like, he doesn't want him to know. He wants to be honest and confess, but he doesn't want him to know how much it bothers him.
What do you think about the decision of the show to do this with Negan, to make us know a little bit more? What do you think about the timing here, and what do you think about the content of the confession?
I really like the content. I think that reveals a good bit of his moral structure, even though his I would still call his morality pretty fucking twisted. I still think there's an interest. Like, Simon, I would say this. If we lived in an opposite world where, for whatever reason, Simon was the one who had ascended to, like, the king.
Everybody would be dead.
He'd be killing people left and right.
Everybody would be
He dead. Wouldn't give a shit. And he, also, if I think you were in this kind of situation, he wouldn't be trying to get back inside. He'd be trying to just get away. He just right.
They'd fall apart.
Yeah.
He's too weak.
I think he would just try to run from the situation. Fuck everybody. Let them die. I just want to live. I just want to go. There is something where there is a kind of twisted, dark selflessness to Negan that I find really interesting. Where, like, he is mean. He's cruel. He punishes people way beyond they should ever be punished. But it is out of a genuine care for, I want the whole of my people, the whole of all of the people that we look after to be safe and taken care of. Like, I feel like I have to make an example of these people for the actual integrity of us as a group, which is fucked up and wrong. But it's interesting seeing this, like, perspective from him that he cares about.
You know what's
about
so fucked about this whole thing?
What?
This whole war was predicated on something that Gregory and Jesus said about Negan killing a 14-year-old boy as a demonstration of his power. And then Rick, because he wanted to secure an alliance with Hilltop, deciding that he would be the fucking Grim Reaper for the Hilltop crew and attacking the weapons outpost and killing all of Negan's men. Mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy to think about? It's crazy to think about the origins of this conflict and where they always begin.
Right.
You know, you talk about this, and I'm not going to go on and on about this, but when you think about this with, like Israel, like, where does it start? How does it ever end if it's always just, you killed my this, you killed my that, you killed my this, you killed, and on and on and on fucking 70 years.
Revenge, retaliate,
through
over and over.
In memorial, right, forever.
Yeah.
And it's funny because in this, it's also fictional and less complex, but we get to see the origin of where this whole inkling started,
right,
which is, we need food. What are we going to do? We kind of become these mercenaries for Hilltop.
And also,
it's okay. We can wash our hands of it because this savior crew, they're morally bad and will be morally better to, like Negan says, kill them in their sleep.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think about, you know?
Yeah. It is interesting. And for hell, for all we know, like the 14-year-old they killed could have been, they maybe caught him raping and murdering one of their people. And they're like, fuck this guy. We're going to kill him in front of all of you.
Who knows?
Who knows? I mean, who knows? I mean, and I still, I want to say, like, I still come down hard. I don't like the whole, like, moral relativism of like, well, you know, Rick's done bad stuff. Negan's done bad stuff. I'm like, Negan's done worse. Like, I want to be clear. I do fall down hard on the side of Negan has done worse and is worse. And I think Rick is better as a human being than him.
Yeah, for sure.
However, yeah. And I think Rick is more ready
But we know that because we have a bird's eye view.
Totally.
100%. Right. The characters don't know that. And that's what's so fascinating about the whole thought behind the Rick and Negan confrontation.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
And that's why these savior people don't just turn coat and go to Rick. They don't know if it's better. They're not sure. They have no idea what Rick is like.
Yeah.
So it's cool to think about.
But yeah, no, I think this is a great scene, both performance-wise. You know, Jeffrey Dean Morgan is just fucking excellent here. They've finally given him something meaty to do. Because as much as the guy can fucking chew scenery in a fun, entertaining way, like he still says some like wild shit that is so ridiculous and I think it's funny and entertaining, but it's cartoon character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is
a moment. Comic book shit.
It's comic book shit. And this is a moment that's like real. This is human. This is a real actual reckoning with some awful stuff that he is still not made peace with. And he's, it is honestly safe to say this is the first person he's ever revealed this information to. He's ever been this honest with about this specific thing. Because the other small like subtext of the scene that I like a lot is that I can't think of any other example on the show that we've seen of Negan being this desperate to have a compatriot, to have somebody like, I don't think I can make it out of here alone. I need your help, Father G. Whatever I got to do. Okay, I got to confess. Fine, I'll confess. Like, he's going pretty far down Father G's path of like, okay, I'll do whatever it takes for us to work together to get out of here. Like, he understands. He kind of like inherently understands the whole need for I need other people.
And think about where Negan was, where Father G was not that long ago, a guy that we weren't sure we could, when he would offer counsel, would be like, fuck you and your ulterior motives to try to gather information.
Right.
We had a bad sense for him because at the time, we should have had a bad sense for him. He was not where he needed to be mentally. He couldn't be trusted.
No.
And for a guy like Negan to be vulnerable in his presence, even if it's through the little fake fucking confession door, then it says something about where Father G is as a character, because we know Negan has a keen sense for people.
Yeah.
It's cool. It shows good character development between the two. A great team up, these two. Two solid actors. They were great together.
Yeah.
Good content.
Yeah. The performances are so strong that the scene is just good.
And they talked like normal people.
Yeah. Right.
It's cool.
Good shit.
That's really it. They do the zombie gut tricks. You learn that. Oh, you know, people get sick, he asks.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I guess that also tells us that he hasn't seen anybody get sick from it, his own people or otherwise.
But he's heard.
But he's maybe heard about it. And he asked them. And you know, Father G is just like, well, we're from Georgia. I haven't seen that happen. Not a problem for us. Okay.
Right.
All right, then. And then they go ahead and tear up these guts, throw it all over them, and head out.
And they needed to put that doubt in our heads at the end. Is Xavier is Father G bit, or is he just sick from gut juice?
Gut juice, yeah. Which depending on how bad it could be, that still fuck you up.
Still fuck you up. Yeah,
fuck you up real bad.
My guess is that they try to maintain some semblance of biological reasoning for the turning. So my guess is that you can't just eat zombie. You probably would turn into, you'd probably die. You'd probably get the fever and die.
Yeah.
I doubt it's something magical in their teeth.
No, yeah. I think, you know, boy, it's been a while since we talked about this stuff.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
I think, you know, I'm a total, it's so funny that we did Dawn of the Dead on the Science Fiction Film Podcast recently, because I'm such a purist as far as like zombie rules and like Romero-based rules.
You fucking wrote your own.
Oh, totally. Totally. Literally. Literally Romero.
I know.
But I think a big part of that is that, you know, the show's already established that everybody's infected. You know, you get poked in the leg and bleed to death, you come back as a zombie. Like, you don't have to be bit.
For sure.
You don't have to have anything. But a zombie biting you is still a literal walking corpse biting you, which the infection from is going to be fucking heinous. And you live in a world where, oh, what are you going to do? Go to the hospital? Like, no, like the infectious bite is just going to make you so sick that you're going to die pretty quickly. And then, of course, come back as a zombie. It's not that the zombie bites give you the zombie virus or whatever it is. Everybody's got that. If you are alive in this world, you are already infected.
It's just a heinous bite.
It's just a heinously, you know, infectious, awful bite that's going to make you sick and you're going to die from it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the Komodo dragon.
Oh, yeah. They used totally. To think
it was, it's not venom. It's just, their mouths are so fucking gnarly.
Yeah. That, so just full of bacteria.
And you just get sick and die.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that's what, this is a world of human fucking dragon bites. Just they're everywhere. Ugh.
Yeah, I guess. It's crazy. But, oh yeah, here's the thing right here. The myth of the Komodo dragon.
Ooh.
It says here that in 2009, Fry discovered the true culprit behind the dragon's lethal bulb by putting one of them in a medical scanner. The dragon has venomous glands, which are loaded with toxins that lower blood pressure, cause massive bleeding, prevent clotting, and induce shock. Rather than using bacteria as venom, the dragon used venom as venom. So there you go. I've been snopesed.
Oh, so yeah. It is actually venom.
They used to think for years it wasn't, though.
Interesting.
In 2009, it was debunked.
Oh,
wow. I should get with the times. Yeah.
Good old Snopes coming through.
Yeah. Crazy. It's not Snopes, but it's crazy to think about. Based on a thorough analysis of the dragon's skull, Fry thinks that they kill with a grip, rip, drip tactic. They bite down with serrated teeth, pull back with powerful neck muscles. The result, huge gaping wounds. The venom quickens the loss of blood and sends the prey into shock. That doesn't discount the possibility that the dragon might also rely on oral microbes. To study these microbes, Fry contacted Ellie Goldstein from UCLA School of Medicine, expert on microbes and animal bites. Goldstein has advised people around the world on treating unusual bites, including at least one from a Komodo dragon. Their bacteria as venom models seem to be based on faulty and dated studies, he says. There's no really good data on the topic. It goes on and on. Anyway, pretty interesting.
Welcome back to the Komodo cast, everybody. That's all the, we're only going to be one episode long. That's all
Let's
the information.
Talk about that on our drive time show. Koala time.
Koala standard time.
Koala standard time.
Shit.
So, right.
So good. And like, dude, the breakdown right before Negan comes back is so good.
It's great.
I love.
Hey, where'd you gun away?
Yeah. What the fuck?
Hey, Regina.
Although I've watched it three times now, and it was not until my third viewing until I was sure that person she shot did pull a gun.
Oh,
they had a gun and cool. They were actually going to shoot. That's why she shot him, and that's also why in the end scene they're like, "Where'd they get that gun?" Oh, I found out it was from our armory, but it must have been one of our people inside here who got that person a gun because the workers aren't allowed to go to the armory. I guess
good point.
So that person actually did pull a gun and she blasted him. I'm like, okay, it's fair. But they escalated the situation. Simon especially escalated the situation so much worse than he should have.
Yep.
Like,
he lost his cool.
Lost it. Totally lost it. Oh, man.
He's going Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yep, that's it. Trevor came out and he
fucking
was like,
Trevor.
Ooh, I got to adjust that attitude. Don't like that tone of voice. Oh, fuck. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, the workers come up there, and this is part of what I meant too by how much I like the direction of this episode. The way this was shot was so fucking cool because they come out
instant kneeling.
Yeah, well, no, even just before that, like all the lieutenants come out of this little private room. This is the upper echelon of the sanctuary and the saviors. They come out saying, hey, the workers aren't supposed to be up here. You're supposed to stay on the factory floor. But as they walk out, you see they are just fucking straight. You are so outnumbered.
No, it's
just
no,
just
no
bare hands. They could overwhelm you and kill you. Like,
of course,
just done. Like, and you can just see, this is one of the things we've talked about so much. And I love when we get to see this kind of like visualization of it so like viscerally of like this is power dynamic shifting in real time. Mm-hmm. Like when Negan's there, the power dynamic for better or worse is very firm and it's very established. Like there's our emperor, everybody fucking kneels, we all do it, workers and lieutenants alike, we all kneel down to Negan, he's the guy in charge. Negan's not there, all of a sudden the workers are looking at each other like it's a lot more of us than them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really doing anything. I can see them starting to tremble at the amount of us. And
we want water, food, and protection.
Yeah. What the fuck's
That's
happening?
The shtick
Where's our
here.
Water? What's right. happening? What's going on? Are you going to fix it? And you can hear people in the crowd. Yeah. When's our water coming back? And like you can just see it crumbling and dissolving. You can just see the coup about to go down. And that's when we hear the
Yep.
Everybody. That hallway shot of everyone
awesome.
Going down, and then here's just Negan all by himself with Father G. So good.
So, good.
So fucking good, man. I loved this scene.
It's awesome.
Ugh.
You want to talk about the paint on the thumb?
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
You know what I thought the first time I saw it was that, so if you go back to the scene when Eugene actually goes into Dwight's like little, you know, apartment or whatever you want to call it there.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, also you got a chest out here, and starts like picking up and he's like, whoa, the pieces are wet. And he gets his thumb wet. Dwight also picks up the piece to write it and put it back. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's implied that maybe he got his thumb wet with it too. And that's when he, you know, obviously later on Eugene puts it together. Oh, you had the paint on your thumb and you did that too. But my first viewing, I was under the impression that, wait, is Eugene also working covertly to undermine the Saviors? And we don't, as an audience, realize it yet?
No way.
I don't think so, but I also don't, at this, so come third viewing, I don't think that's happening. But I think he obviously, you know, he realizes that Dwight is working against the Saviors.
He does.
And I think he might end up helping Dwight.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might actually turn him back. He sees another person.
Which is precisely why Negan goes to Eugene.
Because
he knows that that's
way more vulnerable.
Way more vulnerable. It's a total weak spot. He knows Eugene is pretty spineless. Mm. So he's going to get out in front of that and know that would be my target. I'm looking at the fucking herd. They're all sipping water. Oh, that one looks a little slow.
Limpy leg.
That's the one I'm going
limpy
for.
Limpy silly leg.
Mm. That's fucking Negan, man. He can see that weakness to be exploited, so he wants to get out in front of it.
Oh, yeah.
And manage it. I like it.
Oh, dude. And his threat is so black and white of like...
It's great.
Even if I know you're doing your best to solve it, but you don't solve it, I'm gonna fucking kill you.
Right, because like, it's gonna be pandemonium.
Yeah, it's gonna be fucking...
Pandemonium, WrestleMania.
It's such brother.
It's such a WrestleMania word, pandemonium.
Pandemonium.
A pandemonium in Madison Square Garden is electric. Hulkamania.
Brother, let me tell you. Well, you know Mean Gene.
But yeah, it's cool. I like Negan's decision here.
Yeah.
Just good plays out of Negan this week without being too ridiculously over the top.
Yeah. Yeah. Good shit.
How would you like to wrap this fucker up?
I guess we should talk about the very brief final shots of, I guess it's Eugene coming over to, you know, the same kind of cell that Daryl was in that now, you know, Father G's in. And he's, in our current state of siege, the prickly heat alone's pretty unbearable. I brought you some pillows. Why don't you talk to me? Come on, Daddy, talk to me.
And he's got the dead man's flu.
And he's looking so bad in there.
Mm,
and we don't know whether he got bitten or whether it was just all that yucky, gross zombie juice seeped into an open paper cut somewhere and got him sick. We don't know. Or maybe he's just sick. We don't know. I want to ask you, do you think that this is are we seeing the closing arc of Father G? Is this, he's going to get sick and die? Is this an episode or two away?
If so, he's going to die soon if he's that sick already.
Yeah, he's really
I mean, he's burning
sick. But I, you know, that's
God. I hope he doesn't die like this. Because if he's already that incapacitated, then he's got hours to live. He can barely stay conscious.
I just had a thought. I want to see what you think of it.
Go ahead.
Honestly, had not thought about this until just now as you're talking. Do you think he's faking it to get to the doctor?
That's awesome. I like it.
I kind of think he might be.
Was he doing tons of jumping jacks? He just did like 7,000 jumping jacks to get a sweat on.
45 million push-ups just in there. Yeah. I think he's capable of that kind of guile. I think he might be able to do that, man. Fake it to get close to the doctor. And then,
He just did a ton of push-ups.
Fucking burpees in there. His little fucking closet. Ah, shit, man. I don't know. I hope this is not the end for him. I really do. I'd be bummed if
I feel like they're setting us up for it with the way he's chit-chatting.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm worried. I'm a little worried. Not gonna lie.
We could see. I like your thought process. That would be kind of cool. I mean, yeah, you could work yourself up into a lather by doing jumping jacks in there.
Right.
And hope the guy, somebody's gonna come find you. But what are you just gonna do jumping jacks the whole time and hope?
Yeah.
They're coming. Getting real tired. Ooh. Legs are killing me.
I hope somebody's coming down to my room.
I got to rest.
I don't know, man.
Yeah. I think he's probably sick.
I think he is sick. I hope it's not a deathly zombie illness, mm-hmm. though.
Me too.
I don't know.
Well,
there we go, man.
That's the end, baby. It's over. It's done.
Ooh, boy, howdy.
Do you have any listener comments you want to read this week?
Ooh, I can in short order. If you want to read one first.
In short order, we have a listener comment. I don't really think I do, to be honest with you, because it's a lot of the same. And I mean that with all due respect to my lovely Walking Dead listener.
I got one.
Oh, go ahead.
I have two, but I want to go ahead and read this first. This is from Mr. Elton McManus. And he says,
Elton!
The Walking Dead needs to make a choice to go full-on comic book, bloated character style, or gritty, hard-hitting drama. I feel it started off gritty with an occasional nod to the source material, but the two seasons have flipped far too far the other way without a smooth transition. So much so that I can almost smell the crayon the script is written in. At the moment, I'm on board, but it needs to own what it wants to be. And the reason, thank you for that, Elton. The reason I wanted to read his comment is that I think this episode is a good example of that course correction. I think this is what that should, this is what that Negan can be. This is what that kind of Father G could. Those are two very comic booky characters that in this episode are pretty dynamic and fleshed out and portrayed realistically and interestingly, I think. But I do think Elton's right. We talked about that recently. Of how there are some just comic booky moments that I'm like, they're just so comic booky that I'm like, I feel like they should have adapted it to be a little more real world than what they actually
were. I gotcha.
You know what I mean? But no, you're not going to read any? You're
no,
all set?
No. Yeah, I'm good.
All right. I'm going to read one from our main girl, our bottom bitch, main Karen Eagle Eye Lomas. And she says... Loved that we were shown what happened before Rick and company got to the sanctuary. Backstory on Negan, you think he's got some baggage cheating on his sick wife? Maybe that's what caused him to change from helping people to helping people. You go, Father G. When I think about how we first met you, you've had quite the journey, which is why I thought we were going to lose him last night. I had to rewatch this in the morning. When Rick and Daryl were at the truck that went off the road, Daryl says, think about it. There ain't no kingdom no more. How do they know there's no kingdom? Very good point, Karen. I forgot to bring that up, and that was something I wondered in the episode, too. Also, Rick, what the fuck throwing the bag with the explosives right near a truck that's leaking gas? I could be wrong, but wasn't that 50 caliber on the truck? Why didn't they get that first? Did it fly out of the truck when it went over the side of the road? Daryl went right by that blue box with the ammo to the wooden one with the explosives. At the sanctuary, Negan knows what we all expected. His people would all turn on each other at the sanctuary if he wasn't there. Which is why none of them have turned on Negan. Best line of the night, thank God for you, Negan. That woman gets extra veggies tonight for dinner.
Nice. I actually wrote, Jesse Bev says, so Negan used to help people before the walkers took over? I'm going to guess and say the poor man's version of Tony Robbins. Dude, a motivational fucking speaker. Can you imagine? How funny would that shit be?
Oh, shit, that is
crazy. I used to be a poor man, and then I fed a whole family, and I feed 700 million families turkeys every year. I'm Tony Robbins. Happy Thanksgiving.
Tony Robbins.
Yeah, I will hypnotize you with my teeth. That's awesome. Oh, imagine that, him fucking just coming out on the stage like fucking Belfort there, the guy from Wolf of Wall Street.
Totally. Well, you want success. Fucking.
There's your girlfriend. Think you're a fuck. Can lose. Good. Pick up that telephone.
So good.
You want to be driving in your car? You're going to see me in my Ferrari with my girl with big voluptuous tits. And I just got a ton of money. You want to be me? One of those fucking guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of those real nasty, like fucking take my fucking car keys, boiler room kind of guys.
It, little bitch.
Take my car. I don't even fucking care. You see this watch? This watch costs more than your car. Call yourself a salesman, you son of a bitch. Put that totally coffee down. Coffee is for closes.
Coffee's for closes.
Call yourself a salesman, you son of a bitch.
I could fucking 100% see that.
Totally. He could definitely be the guy in Glengarry going in. First place is a brand new Cadillac Eldorado. Want to see what second place is? Steak knives. Third place is you're fired. So fucking good.
So good.
What's your name, huh?
Oh, fuck.
Nice guy. Fuck you. Go home and play with your kids. That's so brutal. That would be him.
We'll finally get his origin story in The Bat of Wall Street.
Dude, that would so be him.
I'm down.
Oh,
I'm there.
That's good.
Shit. Awesome. I guess that's the episode.
These are the Glengarry leads. To give them to you would be to throw them away. Shit. We're done.
We're done.
Episode over.
That is it, man. I fucking enjoyed the hell out of this one.
It's good up.
It's a strong fucking episode. I like what we learned about Negan. I liked what we learned about Father G. For one thing, I know this is something we haven't really talked about this. Like, when Father G finally started to come around and shed his sweat and become Father G proper, one of the things he did was volunteer to, like, I want to protect Judith. You know, I'll handle that. He like kind of stepped forward to like do those things. Like looking out for the little kids, the little babies, the women, the pregnant Maggies of the world. I'm like, he is so about like trying to protect and like foster new life now. And I'm like, that makes sense now. Like he was he felt like such a failure in that regard that like now right. He wants to like, I want to nurture life. I'll die to get the doctor to protect Maggie's baby. Like I'm fine with that. Like that's a cool fucking character arc, man. Like I like him a lot. I can't overstate it.
It's going to be crazy when he still shows up in hell.
He's like, what the fuck? Did I do enough? How many more Girl Scout cookies I got to buy?
Shit. I know, right?
It's true. Poor bastard.
How many fucking hours I pray for you?
I made Satan confess. Shit.
No shit, right?
Fucking A. But yeah, man, I loved it. This is a fantastic one. Really enjoyed it.
It's good, for sure.
And we done did one in person. Do you know?
We did one in person. Which is a perfect opportunity for us to make an announcement.
After coming off of this episode that we enjoyed so much.
Coming off this episode that we enjoyed so much. Which is why it's important to maintain a...
Sit down, kids. Mommy and Daddy gotta tell you something.
Holy fuck.
Sit down. You kids sit down on the couch. Mommy and Daddy have an announcement.
Was it your fault?
Yes.
Was it my fault, Ma? Ma, I just want you to stay together. Mommy, I thought you loved Daddy.
That's it. Should we just go out? Should we out and say it?
Yeah, we're out and saying it. All right, so here's the deal, guys. Matthew and I are dissolving LSG Media.
Forever. Just no kidding. More podcasts.
No, yeah. Just kidding.
Oh, fuck.
I like to front load this. So here's what I'm going to say. We have decided to stop covering The Walking Dead.
Ta-da! Ta-da!
Sorry to say that is the reality.
That is it.
We've thought about it and talked about it for a long time. We started talking about it before last season, which was how long is the show going to go on? Mm. How long are we going to fucking talk about it? How long are we going to get a chance to do it? And
it's mostly, you know, and I blame all of you for losing faith in the show. And this Mommy and Daddy are getting divorced because of you guys. I'm sorry. That's just has to be said.
That's some good parenting. good parenting.
No, it's for one, I mean, like you've already said, Dean, like we've talked about it for a while. And it's something that like I've said it a million times. I don't really need to say it too much more again. Mm-hmm. I still love this fucking show. I'll be watching this show till it's concluded. Mm-hmm. I love The Walking Dead, I'm full board. But as far as what we're going to cover here at LSG, we have a limited amount of time. We have a limited amount of resources and scheduling abilities, and we want to be able to spread out what we do to maybe a different project, different opportunities. And, mm-hmm. and we have other ideas that we're already working on. And so, yeah, right. we have our energy already pouring in those directions.
Yeah, one thing that's going to happen is that we aren't going to release less podcasts. That's one thing to just remember, guys. We're not going to do less work.
That's
we,
for sure.
We for sure do more work than we have ever done, and we continue to try to do as much as possible. We wanted to, with limited resources, we wanted to make sure that we were focusing our efforts in something that we could be passionate about, something that we would enjoy sitting down to talk about. And it's not the same. Look, when we turn the mics on, we have fun. You can listen to this episode and understand that there's evidence of that. But
we're eight seasons in. We got into the game a little bit late. There's 150,000 Walking Dead podcasts out there. And with no end in sight, I don't know how much longer we want to stay committed to this. And we're trying to really make a push to continue to get more content out. And that's what we're going to continue to do. It's not a decision we love to do,
no.
But what we don't want to do is continue to do something that has grown a bit tedious for us just because we want to get download numbers. And we, of course, don't ever want our listeners to feel like, oh, we're fucking abandoning them. But at the same time, we don't want to abandon you by turning on the mics and phoning it in every week too, because that's a form of abandoning our listeners that I'm just not into. I would rather just be honest with ourselves, be honest with you guys, and just cut bait. And when we decide to cut bait, and if The Walking Dead's going to go on for fucking 10 more seasons and it becomes amazing again and we have the time again, and at that point, we've dedicated more hours and more days and more manpower and trimmed less hours, more hours out of our day jobs, and, you know, continue to make that shift, which is what we've been doing. I've personally cut a whole day at work because of the podcast, because of the membership stuff. You know, we're trying to continue to grow this thing, and we want to continue to focus our efforts into places where we see opportunity, where we see niche, where we see, oh, nobody's really covering that. Wouldn't it be cool to revisit that show? Mm. Oh, and look, that show has already ended. That might not be a great podcasting strategy because you want to stick with things that are current and popular, people are watching. And yes, we're going to look at those opportunities as well. But this is not a decision we're making willy-nilly, and it's definitely not a decision we've taken lightly to stop anything. It takes, you know, if I do say so, it takes some balls to say we're going to stop covering Walking Dead. We're not going to just show up because we know it gets us X amount of downloads.
Right.
And we don't love doing that. And it's possible people might just unsubscribe from all our shows on principle. And to those people, you know, man, you got to do what you got to do with your time. And that, we'd hate that. We don't want that. But if you're taking a stand against LSU Media because you're mad about Walking Dead, then, you know, you got to do what you got to do, man. That's it. So that's it. What else you want to add to that?
I mean, I think, you know, like I said, I think it's important that we come in. I want to be doing something that we are each equally enthusiastic about. I think that matters the most. You know,
sure.
It can't be overstated how much it's important that me and you, or you and Jess, whoever's on the mic, is enjoying what they're doing. Like, it might sound selfish.
That's why we started it.
Right.
That's why LSU Media started.
It might sound selfish at first blush, but it is the God's honest truth as far as, like, what we cover needs to be more fun for us to cover. That comes first than what we think our listeners are going to enjoy. Because our listeners aren't going to enjoy us talking about something that we don't even enjoy. So we have to find that first. Mm-hmm. And so finding something that we are new and fresh and fully engaged with, everybody on the mic, everybody's, you know, our listeners, everybody is like excited and enthusiastic and, you know, ready to go at something new. I think that's where we should go right now. Mm-hmm. That's where we want to put
that. And, you know, it's funny, on the Science Fiction Film Podcast, have we covered movies that we thought were garbage? Yes.
Oh yeah.
We do. But we also have a lot of fun with those movies, and we're not committed to that movie over however many seasons. You see what I'm saying? So with a film podcast,
too bad they made 25 Time Cops, and we got to do fucking all of them. Fuck.
With a show like the Science Fiction Film Podcast, you do a movie and you're sort of out of it. You're not committed to a whole line of shit movies, and we want to have fun. And for me, what sucks for me is that The Walking Dead, when The Walking Dead is bad, I listen back to myself and I'm like, oh, man, if I was a fan of the show, I would just be annoyed. Like, right. Listening to this, I would be annoyed because...
And me and you talked about that way back.
Way back in the day.
I remember talking to you about how much, like, my biggest complaint when I listened to other Walking Dead podcasts was like, these guys don't even seem like they enjoy the fucking show.
Why fucking cover it?
They're just nitpicking and being shitty and hating it. And I'm like, I watch the show because I love it. I want to hear other people who enjoy it talk about aspects of it that I missed and pointing out things that I didn't think about. And, oh, let's go deeper into it because we all are so on board and enjoying that. And like that, I feel it's kind of like the Dark Knight thing of like, you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Like, I don't want us to go on so long that we become those guys. And I'm
exactly.
Like, fuck, I'm the guy I hate. That I'm
because that's
on
every guy in every job they hate.
Right.
Right. Totally. And guess what? We're our own boss in this thing. So we have the opportunity to be like, you know what? What the fuck are we doing?
Karen Lomas in the chat. If Daryl takes a shower, will you cover The Walking Dead again?
But you know what I'm saying? Like, that's, we don't want to become, now there are shows that doesn't mean we don't want to be critical at times, but we don't want the big scary you to be the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. We want the occasional shitty moments in Game of Thrones to be the ones we take the show to task for. But overall, we're generally speaking happy with the fucking show. And we fucking can't wait for that shit to come on.
That's what's so funny about us having to announce this now after we had two really strong episodes.
But that's where we have to maintain conviction here.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
We can't make decisions based purely off of the occasional good episode. I just think we've been feeling like, you know, we've been doing Walking Dead for a while. The show has, it seems to be making decisions. We're just like, we're going to just do this forever. Fuck it. And that just annoys me a little. You know what I mean? Like there's something about that kind of annoys me. I don't know. Personally, you're just going to continue to pull the fucking money-making machine arm.
Right.
And there's no real end in sight. Right. You know?
And I like you've already said, I mean, like, we're not taking this lightly. Like, this is how technically The Walking Dead podcast is how LSU Media began. Like, this is how me and Dean met and started doing podcasts. And this was the first things we talked about. Before we talked about any movies or any other shows, we were talking about The Walking Dead. So it's still like, it means a lot to me. It's the one show I watch and call home to talk to my mom about. It's the one show I go and watch it with friends live and like enjoy the show with people and, you know, make a big to-do out of. So like, this show still means a lot to me and I still really enjoy it. And it's not easy. Like, but I was actually, like I said to Dean, like, I was the one who even brought up, like, I think we go ahead and end this. Like, you know, I want to push forward with something that our listeners are all around the board excited about. I don't want to just keep pressing on with something that maybe me and Dean aren't even as excited to be on the mic about as we are, as we used to be. And I just don't want to phone it in. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't want to do this so long that we're phoning it in. I want to, we're going to Seinfeld it. We're going to go off on a high note.
Right. I think so. I think that's the move. It's just, like you said, it's hard to, I don't know. It's just, I don't know if there is enough meat on the bone for me personally enough to stay interested in the way they want to tell stories. And it's kind of like stick a fork in it. I kind of feel that way, you know, and it's shitty, but it's just the way I feel. So I can't, and you know, we like Matt said, we definitely don't take this decision lightly. We talked a lot about it, a lot of emails, a lot of telephone calls. And then, you know, that way, and then we're like, you know what? We kind of did it. And there's no good or bad guy here. It's not my decision or Matt's decision. It's our decision. We knew we needed to talk about it, and that's what we decided to do. I think we said enough about that. We aren't just going to up and bounce. We're not going to just pull tents and walk. We're going to go to the mid-season finale and stop there.
That's it. Three more episodes.
So we're going to do three more episodes. We are also going to continue to maintain the Facebook group page. We know we have LSG Media fans who continue to listen to The Walking Dead or watch it, and those fans will continue to exchange ideas and talk and chit chat. And you know, I just didn't need to be, you know, when your Facebook group page just turns into we're railing on every episode, it just sucks for the people who like the show. And right. I just don't want to continue to contribute to that. I'm just going to step back. And if I can't make something, if it's not going to be hilariously funny and we make fun of it and we're just going to dump on it the whole time, it's like, just not fun.
Right.
It just lacks fun to me. I'm not interested in that.
And I still already have some plans for content that I would like to continue on the page. Maybe some one-man video recap discussion things where I, you know, talk about the episodes for a few minutes and do some more discussion on the page, some stuff like that. Like that will, I you know, me and Dean have talked about this, that the Facebook page, the LSG Media Facebook page for The Walking Dead is still going to remain active. It's not just going to be a page that sits there. We're going to be posting stuff and doing stuff. It'll still be a discussion place for LSG listeners who watch The Walking Dead.
Yeah, we've talked about a lot of different things. You know, it's no surprise that we coincidentally, we're releasing a Battlestar Galactica podcast that covers the reimagined series, starting with the miniseries in 2003, running through the series that started in 2004. That's going to be released in December 7th. We've talked about looking at other stuff like finishing up Firefly. We've got 2 episodes on it already. We could do the other 10, finish that up. There's a lot of TV shows that have come and gone that have finite time and have ended. It's what the average listener might not understand is that it's very difficult to just get into a television show when you don't know how many seasons it's going to run and you don't know for how long you're going to be tying up your time. Right. Like people like Cover Mr. Robot. And now everyone's like, Mr. Robot sucks.
Are they already?
Yeah. Shit. So that's what I mean.
It's like 3 seasons.
But that's what I'm saying. Some people are like, oh, this most recent season. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you just dive into a show and then you love it. And, you know, we even talked about Handmaid's Tale, whatever the fuck it's called. And you were like, oh, they got another season in our discussion. And then my discussion with that was, well, how many seasons are they going to go? And it's just indeterminate. So they're going to go way beyond the source material for how long? And do we want to get tied up in a show that's going for how long? How long is the show going to go? Something like Firefly, we know only has 12 eps. We can bang it out and be done. Something like Battlestar Galactica, we know has 70 eps. We can bang it out and be done. We even talked about looking at something like Star Trek, the original series. That'd be hilarious to go back and watch all those. It's only 3 seasons, right?
Yeah.
Short little things like that that we can start to wrap our head around. You know, all the big podcasts, all of our competitors, I guess you'd say, they're always jumping on the show coming out, just like every other swinging dick. And they're all jumping on this and jumping on that. And yes, we're going to continue to do that. But what we're looking at shit like fucking HBO shows, like Stranger Things, 9 episodes. Holla fucking Luya. Right? Westworld. Yeah. 10 episodes. That's it.
Dunskeys.
We can fucking commit to 6 weeks. That's nothing. But The Walking Dead, 17 weeks a year.
With a nice break in the middle.
Fuck, oh, man. Yeah, like, that's a long... And then it's like, how do you launch a show in the middle of that? Like, how do you cover... So it's just the logistics of it and breaking it up into 2 things and making it 16... It's just, it's a pain in the ass, man.
Pain in the ass.
Like, we're going to... We've learned a lot in this podcasting game in the last 3 years, and you know we're closing in on having a couple hundred paying members, and we're doing well. We keep going in the right direction. We're going to continue to do that, and sometimes that means making hard fucking choices. And this was not an easy choice that we decided to make. And we when Matt and I thought about fuck, we could stop talking about The Walking Dead. Our immediate thoughts were about all of you guys. Like, we were cool. We're like, we could probably stop and be fine. But fuck our poor listeners. Like, you know, not like, oh, we're so amazing. They need us. They don't, right? No. There's a million podcasts. They can still talk to each other. They still can enjoy the fucking show. But we thought about, fuck, how's this going to impact the listeners? And we thought, hopefully they can just find more content from LSG Media that they love and hopefully see through this decision with us, which wasn't easy. But yeah, man, I think we've given the due respect required.
Oh, dope. Yeah. That we don't seem like flipping assholes on the issue.
Yeah, it's definitely not. But December 7th, we will be launching. You can get the Battlestar Galactica podcast now. You can subscribe to it right now.
How many episodes are available right now? Like 10?
Zero.
11? No, but I'm saying for members.
Oh, for paying members?
Yeah.
We've released 10 episodes.
10 episodes are already available.
So what people don't know is we already recorded the first season of Battlestar Galactica, and if you are a member of the LSG Media Illuminati, you already have access to all 10 episodes. But as the normal, regular public free stuff is concerned, December 7th, we're going to drop the first 2 episodes covering the miniseries. So those will be available in 2 weeks. You can get the podcast now. It's called Recommissioned, a Battlestar Galactica podcast. If you just search LSG Media in the iTunes store or your podcasting app, you'll find all our podcasts. That's the best thing to do. Just put LSG Media, search, and you're going to find it.
Everything.
You'll find everything we've ever done. And subscribe to that shit. And starting December 7th, you're gonna get episodes. And once you guys catch up to where Matt and I are, we'll start recording them live. It'll be cool. You know, we'll get the live thing going with that show. Even though it's not, it's not like in the zeitgeist. I still think there's a big, giant, loyal Battlestar Galactica fan base that are like, man, could somebody release a really good Battlestar Galactica podcast? And I'm not shitting on the other ones.
And it's also, we haven't even talked about this much, that the dynamic is different because you've seen them all. You've seen every episode of Battlestar, some more than once. And I have never seen any. And I am diligent about not spoiling myself or going ahead of where we are. Every episode that we're covering is the only episode I've seen up to that point. Mm-hmm. And I am the one guessing and trying to make predictions. And Dean gets to sit back and laugh at how fucking wrong I am and how crazy all of it could be. And he knows, but can't spoil it for me.
Yeah.
So new listeners, people who've never watched the show before, can have the same experience alongside me. Like we are all watching it together. Old-timey listeners can be right there with Dean laughing at me.
It's fun, yeah. And in BSG is not why The Walking Dead is being canceled.
No.
It's just a byproduct of us now being able to double our efforts there and really get it going. And the thing that's like I was telling you, the thing about BSG that's cool is that I can look at how many episodes are left and keep crossing them off.
Exactly.
There's an end
in sight.
When you're a podcaster, that's something, if you don't podcast, you might not understand, but it's kind of cool to see the end in sight.
Totally.
Like even with Game of Thrones, I'm like, cool, I'm kind of happy it's going to be ending. It's bittersweet. Yeah. But next project, there's more shows. Guys, people are writing amazing TV shows these days, and you have to write good TV to fucking compete. And just like people have to compete for your viewing times, we have to compete as good podcasters, and we're going to try to, you know, there's going to be this show, there's going to be this show, fucking there's going to be how many, do you know how many amazing shows are going to be out in fucking the next 5 years? There's probably going to be a shitload of awesome shit coming out.
It.
Netflix getting in the game and this one getting in the game.
And sci-fi is coming out strong.
Yeah, absolutely,
it's making a new run. Like we have to hop onto the next sci-fi frontier.
For sure. And you know, and as like I said, as we push on in the future, as we start to replace our day jobs with LSG Media and get deeper into that, more things will be covered. But in the meantime, we're gonna put our efforts where we want to put them, where we will get the most joy, and hopefully that translates into more joy for you guys, because we're not just sitting here whining about fucking shell casings.
There's not enough brass. I don't see it.
That's it. So anyway, I hope you guys understand. That's our big fat message.
There we go.
We wanted to give you time before we just fucking pull the plug on you, let you think about it. You can email us or hit us on social media or whatever. I think we feel pretty confident in our conviction here. So we'll certainly hear what you have to say, but we're not changing our mind.
And we still, we got three more episodes of our last waltz. And we can make sweet, gentle love after that.
That's it.
And part ways.
Yep. Sweet, gentle love, part ways. And that is that. Matt, what else do you have to say today? Anything?
I am fucking tapped. All I mean is that, enjoy this episode. Super strong, super good.
Yeah,
glad
man.
To quit the show after this excellent piece of television.
It's a good one. All right, well, we're going to get out of here. Thank you guys very much. You guys have a wonderful evening. We'll catch you next week. Bye. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning into another episode of The Walking Dead Podcast by LSG Media. If you like what you heard, remember to share the episode with friends. Get us out there. Get our name out there. Help us out. And you know what? Check out libertystreetgeek.net. We got all kinds of podcasts over there. Plenty to listen to. Science fiction, film, Game of Thrones, True Detective, and more. All right. We'll see you next time.